So I was wondering today, do you think Steve Harvey's pubes look just like his mustache?
I hope I'm recording. Okay, good. You may proceed.
Lock on.
This is Superhero Time with XV.
Everything good we have is thanks to Ryoma.
Hey, Mickey.
Clog of toilet.
Paladin.
Nobody wants a bruised banana.
Ken.
My berries have sprouted.
And Fort Max.
Never give up.
Oh, good. We're still recording, so we should go ahead and do the show quickly. It's superhero time, and it's the end of Gaim.
Boo.
Maybe.
Hooray!
Are you just doing that to be contrary, or are you actually happy to see Gaim be gone?
Not be gone, but to be done, to be finished, to have succeeded.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mostly was wondering if you were doing that to be contrary only.
Well, I was doing it to say that Paladin's wrong.
Okay,
it's like arriving at the end of a roller coaster that was great.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like roller coasters in general, but okay.
Ew, well, imagine you were on one that was great.
So one that doesn't have any hills and only goes like 5 miles an hour around the curves?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's called just a train, though.
Trains go faster than that.
Especially, like, a super train. That's to go fast enough to take off the tracks and fly over the city. Buzz a jetliner.
Yeah, that part's fun.
They need, like, a perspective shot from inside the plane where the train just goes by and honks at them. See, GoGo 5 would have been so much better if I wrote it. Paladin, you're slipping.
I was gonna say, wait a second. That was a Paladin.
Did his microphone break again?
Can you hear me now?
Paladin, are you there? No, I'm just kidding. We can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You bastards.
Hey, don't put a plural on that. I didn't say anything. On the other hand, I didn't say anything.
Exactly.
Excellent. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the last three episodes of Gaim this episode, because sure. That also means we're not doing any Tokyuger this week, which I'm really happy about.
Hooray!
Got two, because I kind of forgot to watch this week's episode.
Yeah,
by this week's, you mean last week's, because this week's would be what we would talk about next week if we were on the normal schedule.
Yes, I mean last week's, because that would be the episode we cover this week.
Although I watched this past weekend's Tokyuger on the live stream, and it was kind of entertaining, so that's like high praise for me.
Slowly coming around.
Well, I still don't want to watch the subs, but it was entertaining to watch and just laugh at the visuals.
I'll marathon through it tomorrow, probably.
Does that mean we have to do three episodes of that next week?
No. I'll tinker with the scheduling to get us back on track, but we're not doing three episodes of Tokyuger next week.
No, that was not me.
Why do we do to deserve that?
No,
I remember.
There will probably be two episodes of Tokyuger and a power playback next week. We were going to do Battle Fever J7 or something, right? As the next power playback?
Yeah. I watched it anyway. It was fun.
Okay, good. Good.
No advance.
No, that'll be good, because we'll have something good to end the show on after an hour of Tokyuger.
And I'm going to have to watch it again, because I totally don't remember what happened. I just remember that I liked it.
Fair enough.
I was like, Battle Fever J, actually. I don't know what happened, but I liked it.
Good summary for the series, I guess. So before we get into the Gaim marathon here, Paladin, is there any news worth talking about this week?
Well, let's get to the only thing I think you care about, Figo Arts Master Asia.
Which is not necessarily on topic, but hey, Figo Arts.
Is it
January?
Did the hell, like, just freeze over?
It's pretty hot in here, so I don't think so.
And apparently I read that the Robot Damashi Master Gundam can actually swap faces.
No. Master Asia, I believe, comes with a fully separate Master Gundam head.
Oh, okay.
Why?
Because there was a scene in G Gundam where where Master Asia's face and Domon's faces appeared in their Gundams for, you know, dramatic purposes.
Yes.
So these are like effects parts to replicate. Well, one effects part. Maybe if we get like a renewal Domon.
Yes. Oh, God. Yes.
We don't even need a renewal Domon. We just need faces that aren't terrible.
Well, I mean, figure arts have advanced a lot since 2008 when Domon came out. They could totally overhaul the body.
Yeah. No. My question is this Master Asia a new body or the same one they've been shopping around for the past 5 years?
Hell if I can tell.
I don't know if anyone has noticed yet.
Either way, I want it.
the Tamashi page went up for that too, and like Master Asia's suggested retail price is like 4,800 yen or so, and they have Domon off to the side where you can, you know, because it's the same line technically, and that sold for like 2,800 when it came out 5 years ago.
Yeah. Now, is that mold changes or economic changes?
I would say economic
changes. In fairness, though, you know, Domon is a very, very simple figure considering it is just basically a dude in a black bodysuit.
Yeah, but most new first-run figure arts are
over
4,000 now. I think it's just a matter of economics.
Back then, they were around, you know, 3,000 or so. Mm-hmm. Or less.
But I'm still going to get one because 5 years waiting for Master Asia to get released, I kind of can't not.
And I think Bluefin said they can bring him over here.
They implied that, at least.
Hopefully. Well, they've been bringing over the Robot Damashi stuff.
Yeah, they don't seem to have a problem with Gundam stuff for licensing.
So, yeah, that'll probably happen. So I'm going to sit around and wait a little bit, see if it pops up on.
Because I think, like, you know, Bandai Japan and Sunrise are desperate for Gundam to be popular over here. So, you know.
Yeah, well, they're trying to find different ways to push it now that they realize that TV is not the answer.
I was thinking, though, like, don't you think if they dubbed Build Fighters?
But where would you put it now?
Well, I'd probably have to go to Cartoon Network.
But where on Cartoon
Network? Which is
Network? Sad. There's not a kids block that's really open to anime on Cartoon Network anymore.
There's not really a... If it's not owned by Cartoon Network itself,
yes,
it's going to get delayed and eventually canceled because it didn't have ratings because it was never airing.
Aired? Yeah. you could be like, you know, Symbiotic Titan, where we canceled it because it didn't have, you know, toys selling, and they're like, yeah, but you never made toys.
Well, I mean, that's what happened with SD Gundam Force. It was basically like this cycle where, you know, they kept rerunning the first season daily after first running all the episodes daily. So
they ran the first 25 episodes in under a month, and then they ran it
right into the ground.
Well, okay, so with the constant reruns, the toy sales started slipping because there was no new media, and Cartoon Network did not want to pay to air the second season because the toy sales had gone down because there was no new media.
That is literally why
SD Gundam Force did not air a second season.
This is why we need Eddie Van Halen on guitar.
This is in spite of the fact that the second season was already dubbed.
Yeah, and had aired in Singapore.
Yeah. I think even before it aired in Japan, didn't it? Because I know the first half aired before it aired in Japan.
Maybe? That was like, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Yeah. I don't remember specifically.
And we eventually got the second half, but
on DVD but several years
then no one was watching.
Yeah.
Well, no, it never aired. It only came out on DVD.
Exactly.
I should have.
And then there's the fact that Turn-A subs have never happened.
Well, that was because Bandai Entertainment shuttered.
I mean, yeah, they had Turn-A on the schedule, but it shut down before they actually got it done.
Yes.
And nobody else cares about Turn-A apparently.
Not unless, you know, has anybody gotten a Gundam license yet? I forget. Anybody's going to be Funimation, but hopefully.
I wouldn't mind seeing a Funai dub Gundam. Yeah. I don't think that would be the worst thing to happen.
No, but I mean, that's about your only... It's either going to be, for like stuff that's going to be, you know, mass marketed, it's going to be Funimation or Viz nowadays, and it's probably then going to be Funimation for that. because they've been picking up a lot of Sunrise's other stuff too.
Makes sense. They probably have a deal worked out, like just in general.
Yeah.
I mean, we did get official Double Zeta subs recently.
Yeah, online. Mm-hmm. That was a surprise. So yeah, somebody within Bandai is trying to, you know, push that stuff out, you know, digitally now, because they even put like Char's Counterattack up subbed a little while back on their YouTube channel. So hopefully both Dreco and Build Fighters Try will be done the same way that they did with Build Fighters.
Build Fighters Try absolutely is.
Yeah.
They've announced that already.
Okay, good. That'll be easy. Then.
So apparently this is the Gundam podcast now.
It seems that way.
Unless somebody's going to give us some Tokusatsu news.
Tokunatsu?
Here's some news. Furumaru finally came out in America.
What's that?
Furumaru from Go Gaiden Super Mega. And surprise, he's actually pretty good.
What?
Yeah, they've added in a secret bonus mode to him where he's also in a Mega Winger homage.
What?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Huh. Now the douche is a ninja.
Yeah. Ninja douche.
Dear.
Especially what it boils down to is the Ninja Star splits apart and reconfigures as, like, you know, the Mega Wing.
Uh-huh.
And then the Furumaru helmet, if you flip around backwards and hide the arms, becomes the helmet from the Mega Winger.
Huh.
And the chest piece flips around to replicate the chest piece from the Mega Winger.
And then I just imagine in a world where Super Mega Force was done more like Gokaiger as a full-length season, and they had, like, the guest stars and stuff, and there would be this whole episode of them meeting Zane where he would teach them the ultimate power of being a douche.
That's
first find your best friend's sister and date her.
Uh-huh, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. But that is kind of a surprise to put that in that, because it's not like the Lion where you can kind of connect that between Gowranger and Shinkenger, but no, let's just randomly connect space and Ninja Star.
Now,
but I've seen the picture, it works.
Backpack to,
it does.
The Q Rex.
Yes, you can actually. It's got instructions for it.
Huh.
Well, wait. Into the dinosaur mode or to the robot mode?
Robot.
Yeah, robot mode, it definitely has instructions for that.
Have you done that?
Yeah.
Because the robot mode is the one that used the wings.
Well, it's there.
Hmm.
So there you go.
It's kind of a weird homage, but it works.
Yeah, so it's better than the Japanese version.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Muck Falcon is too, because it has its own Megazord mode.
Also true.
Mm-hmm.
Proof that Japan doesn't always do everything better.
Now, does Muck Falcon have Bandai America engine souls?
It does not. Oh. And also, it can't do hover mode either.
Lame.
Two of the wheels fold down, but not the back ones.
Well, that's just, you know, unsymmetrical.
Yeah. So I guess the front part could hover.
But then what does the back do?
Roll?
In the air?
No.
It doesn't lift the back part. The wheels stay on the ground. And then it just...
Yeah. So it becomes a wheelie, nitro-burning funny car or something.
Powered wheelie, yeah. Makes perfect sense. So what else is going on?
Let's see. There's going to be a Kamen Rider Kuga manga.
And who's writing it?
Inoue.
Yeah.
So is it Godai or Useless? Because it'd be hilarious if it was Useless.
Doesn't Inoue kind of imply Useless?
Well, he did write some really good Kuga episodes.
I wonder if Inoue does better in print media than he does in TV.
I doubt it.
Because, you know, some people do better in one form of media than the other, like, say, Stephen King. Because he can write good books, but his movies tend to be kind of shit.
That's not necessarily his
fault.
Well,
didn't Inoue write that one rapey Fize novel?
I don't know. I don't really read Japanese novels, nor do I pay attention to Fize.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's just a train wreck waiting to happen.
I'll allow that because we're not talking about Tokyo Drift.
Wait, what? What?
Paladin thought he was making a pun, but it wasn't actually a pun.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Actually, I didn't think I was.
he does it without even realizing it now. Oh, God.
Well, that's worrying.
I know.
Oh, Paladin... also, in terrible news, Transformers 4 comes out on DVD tomorrow, so all of our listeners, don't buy it. Just spend that money on something more helpful, like some rubbing alcohol to swallow.
Or, I don't know. There's Smash Bros. Coming out Friday. Buy that instead.
That's a good compromise.
How's it a compromise?
Last week.
How's it a compromise?
Shh.
So is everybody buying Smash?
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe.
Eventually.
Yeah, eventually for me, basically.
Why eventually?
Because I've got other game things going on right now. And I only have so much monies.
I suppose.
I have Destiny and Borderlands. So.
But neither of those are Smash.
Yeah, but I've been hearing some good things about Destiny.
Destiny is the weirdest thing in that... objectively, it should be absolutely terrible, but I cannot stop playing it.
Yeah, I have some friends that are really caught up in it. I'm like, I have nothing to play that on. Oh, well.
I guess it is a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never played a video game like it where, like, the story is shit. There's no characters. This gameplay is repetitive. I'll just play for another 6 or 7 hours today.
Yeah,
it's like Warcraft without a story.
Yeah, it's like the story was not their concern, clearly.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's weird little tidbits coming out talking about how the lead writer quit in a huff, and then like the story got gutted out of the game. But anyway, that's not Toku related. So let's get back on topic.
Do we have anything Toku to talk about?
Okay, back to movie stuff. Roberto Orsi's apparently no longer attached to the Power Rangers film.
Muppet arm waving, yay!
He goes on. He's gonna go make Star Trek 3 instead.
Yeah, you keep fucking up something that's already been ruined. Don't dip your finger. Don't dip your dick into our cheese, okay?
Yeah.
So can we get
stuff is already terrible enough as it is. We don't need you to make it worse.
So now that Orsi's off the project,
destroyed. So you know, just go on, please.
Now that Orsi's off the project, can we get like M. Night Shyamalan to take over?
No, I want, shit. Never mind.
That's what you're gonna get.
I completely forgot the fucker's name.
Well, what did the fucker do?
Pacific Rim. Guillermo del Toro.
Yep. Ooh. That would be awesome. We will never get him.
We can do big robots fighting monsters. We know we can do cool, you know, karate moves from Blade 2.
I forgot that was him, too. That was an awesome movie.
Yes, it is. It's a shame they never made a third Blade movie.
Yeah, I can't really make myself care about Power Rangers movie news, considering we're probably like 3 years off from it at the soonest still.
I can't really make myself care about Power Rangers Dead Stop.
I can kind of relate to that, too.
Yeah.
I care about Power Rangers as much as I care about what toys it's going to bring me of Sentai series.
Yeah, there's that. I'm talking
and then
new
And
stuff.
Then you remember
like, you
that
know,
we're not going to get...
Stuff, older stuff, that's a different thing, but...
Then you remember we're not going to get GoBusters adapted.
Well, I figure if I keep hitting Bargain Hunt every so often, I'll eventually get all the GoBusters toys I need.
Had any good finds down there anyway?
I haven't. David has.
Yeah, that huge downtown thing.
Yeah.
What was that? City
out of print and was like half price.
I need to go back up to the Bargain Hunt in Clarksville sometime.
You can just take the last train there.
Just because it's there and it's a shorter ride than Chattanooga. Although, the one down there is a lot nicer.
That's
alarming.
Wow, that's saying something. Because I've been in Dollar Trees cleaner and better organized.
I know. Me too. Of course, I've been in Dollar Trees cleaner and better organized than Kmart, so.
That's not hard.
Speaking of which, have you heard if that rumor was true or not, or about your Kmart?
I haven't heard anything more.
What rumor was that?
That there's another wave of Kmart closings, and the one here in town might be among them, which would basically leave me with Walmart only.
Hmm. Actually, speaking of Kmart, Jetfire's on sale there this week, and if he does not show up, I am going to be pissed.
For how much?
Like $40.
Huh. Wonder if the one's still here.
Something. Wonder if the $5 one's still... off. I mean, that more than covers tax, so you know.
Hmm.
They just keep talking about, well, first we're going to put up a shelf tag in an empty spot. Then we're going to put up a sale tag on an empty spot.
I think they use the same shelf tag for the movie leaders, so...
No, it says Generations on it, I believe.
So the movie stuff that was Generations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the air quotes good movie stuff was Generations series. Which was basically Hasbro's way of tricking the stores into keeping Generations stuff on the... in the computer systems.
Well, Toys R Us had different shelf tags for movie leaders and Generations leaders.
Probably because they're priced different.
Toys R Us.
Well, that implies that they're from different assortments, though, so...
Or at least Toys R Us organized them that way. The purpose, though, was just to, like, keep Generations as a thing active in the store systems while movie was going on. So then you still get, like, Tinkers and Rat Traps while they're still... Well, not Bumblebees, but, like, Fast Action Battlers or whatever they're called now. Power Attackers. Hanging around
fast
everywhere.
Fast Action bullshit.
Sure. Weren't the older Fast Action Battlers not terrible, though?
Some of them, I think.
Yeah.
They're marginally less terrible.
Mm-hmm. So do we have any more, like, Toku stuff to talk about?
Well, we did get to see Kamen Rider Drive's rival this week, the Machine Chaser.
Or I think there's a lack of an E in there, so it's like Machin Chaser.
Wasn't that sounds, the...
Ah, what is this thing?
That sounds like it should be...
It is a not Kamen Rider.
I'm pretty sure Machin Chaser was someone's bike at one point.
I was going to say, that sounds like it should be... well, you might be mixing up two of Agito's vehicles, Machine Tornator and the Guard Chaser or something.
I like the idea of having a rival who is who transforms, but is not a rider.
Well, he's like a half a rider.
Yeah, he has a motorcycle.
He looks like if XL had a DuPont form.
Yeah, he looked like the XL DuPont.
He does. Kind of like Drive looks like Axel.
But a car.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the concept.
I don't like this costume.
Also... Dude totally looks like AG.
A little bit.
Oh, it only has to last until he turns kind of sort of good.
And he gets the other half of his suit back?
Yes.
Or at least the other half of his face back?
Actually, that one eye is more of a Kamen Rider like eye than Drive's visor is.
Yeah.
You know, if his eye was black, he'd look Sentai.
Yeah, kind of. But when are we going to get the scans about the Go On Your Drive crossover?
Not soon enough, damn it.
Go On Your remains fantastic.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there was really much doubt.
Well, it's been 5 years since I've watched through all of it.
Oh, you're watching through all of it now?
Yep, we finished it. We even finished all the way up through the Shinkenger Versus movie.
Damn.
Which is just flawless.
Yeah, it's hard to find a more lopsided combination than Takeru and Sosuke.
But that's what makes it work.
I know.
That's why it's so good.
And what's like, great Takeru is that Sosuke has the balls to call Takeru out on all of his shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, Takeru just spends the entire movie completely over him from the moment he meets him. It's great.
Plus, it has Guy Arc and Genta.
Yeah.
Yeah. What they did with the Guy Arc was just so brilliant. Let's bring them back, but we're not going to resurrect them and have them be evil again. They're just going to be dead and enjoying getting drunk all the time, not to worry about this shit.
And they're still happy with it.
Yep.
Yeah.
They try to get brought into the fight, and they just run away to get drunk.
Just perfect.
The Guy Arc are great. Best villain group.
Yep.
And we also got a bunch of Tokuger skins showing the Hyper Terminal and the President of the Rainbow Line.
Also the suit for the Kingliner Megazord.
Holy crap, that is a big, that's a big train.
Well, it's the Kingliner, it's the station, you know.
Yeah.
It looks so much better as a suit than as a toy.
Well, most things do, just not Tokuo.
Yeah. But yeah, it looks pretty cool, actually.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I like it.
It's still Tokuger, after all.
I like it.
I mean, it's still a hot mess, but, you know.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah. It's not as much of a hot mess as Tokuo.
Well, no. I mean, you can tell Tokuo was probably the first, like, the very first thing they designed when they decided, hey, what if we did trains?
They didn't go back and renovate it any.
No. No, well, they just kept. They just.
What
they just. They just.
Is this? What happens if we just make all the villain costumes cool and all the hero costumes suck balls?
Oh, see, that's what happened. They designed. They started with just designing villain costumes, and by the time they got done with that, they basically were out of like inspiration and money
and time.
Yeah.
Well, it's the whole G.I. Joe principle: make the villains look awesome and have the heroes look like doofuses.
Speaking of which, it looks like all five are getting the armor now.
Well, kinda.
What do you mean by kinda? You say these things, you don't ever follow up on them, so we...
Well, it would be spoiling the most recent episode, I believe.
Okay, I haven't seen the most recent episode. Okay. Just going by the scans.
Well, which of these scans is showing they're all in the armor?
There's... Some of them use it other than right, so that's something, at least.
Well, we knew that part, anyway.
Yeah, I imagine that they're swapping it around.
Oh, yeah. It works like Super Shinkinger.
Well, except one of the pictures is both the girls with the armor on.
Yeah, well, that's a special case, and it's kind of terrible, and...
Okay.
Train bathrobe.
Do you want the spoiler for it?
No, I'm good.
Because I can explain very easily, and...
No. I'm good.
I'm more interested in this monster's like two wine bottles busting out of a chess rook.
Yes.
I damned love these monster designs in Tokuger.
Yeah. And unsurprisingly, Schwartz is alive. Huh.
Oh, we've already seen that though from like last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You'll probably like Powdered Wig Bonky.
What? Oh. Oh.
Oh, so that reminds me, because it sounds similar. I had this idea the other day for for what the next Pokemon generation versions can be. Pokemon Balky and Larry versions.
Yes.
I don't remember why that occurred to me, but it did, and I had to share it next time we were on. Because we are...
Have Pokemon left and right. And the third version would be ambidextrous. Eh? Eh?
Hmm.
Well,
how would you...
Nobody knew how to handle that joke.
How would you represent ambidextrous on the third version?
Both hands up like what?
But people would just call that Pokemon Shrug. Also, I would like it to be represented with L and R... in Japan, and just have everybody be super confused. And their third version can just be a question mark. Like, whatever.
How about Pokemon Heaven and Hell?
And third version is Purgatory?
This is more Digimon games, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It might actually be, I don't know.
Well, most Digimon games usually are Purgatory, so...
Dusk and Dawn were good.
They were?
They had their moments.
There's been, like, 20 others, and they weren't.
Well, I didn't play those.
I like Digimon World for the DS.
Oh, that was the predecessor to Dusk and Dawn. It was okay. A little too easy.
Yeah, but there's times I'm okay with that.
your mom? Hmm. Well, it seemed like that's where that was going.
Yeah, it just kind of fell flat.
Well, your mom's more round than flat.
This is true.
We talked about the whole falling thing earlier.
So, does she bounce?
No, she just rolls.
Okay.
Because it's not really falling if part of her never leaves the ground.
It's true. Just shifting.
Yeah, rolling. Well, since we've come back around to where we started, I guess that means we should, like, you know, get into the whole Gaim wrap-up thing.
Yeah, that's all the important stuff out of the news anyway.
Oh, I think we stretched the definition of important there quite a bit, but,
I repeat.
Yeah. All right, let's fruit time.
Superhero Gaimer!
So 3 weeks ago on Gaim, these three things happened.
Ken, why don't you do this one?
45?
Yes. Ken, you're supposed to be prepared.
How about somebody who actually watched the episode?
Oh, no. It's just, my shit's loading slowly. Okay. So, anyway.
I was trying to remember
where it started.
Mylanta? What's...
just trying to remember where it started. With
mineral Pico. Oil?
Okay. So, it starts with Pico. Pico? Pico? Pico.
Pico.
De Gallo.
Like oil? Wait, no. he is not a lantern.
Pico di Goyo. Somebody Photoshop that right now.
So Kaito is not Kaito. Pico is wondering, you know, why, you know, all his buddies are kind of, you know, stabbing him in the back. When Zack shows up and just hands him a letter and says, give this to Orin. And he just kind of looks like he's about to shit himself, but he's like, okay. Regardless, back at the Gaim garage, they're patching Kota up, except it's not...
He doesn't need them to.
It's not really necessary, because he's healing... kind of like Wolverine.
He's about the same height, so.
And that is a nasty, like, you can tell that would be like a deep ass wound from where Mitchie.
You do realize he got basically run through, right?
He did, yeah.
The only reason the thing didn't come out the other side was because that'd be too like gory and too much for the effects department to actually.
Yes, because they have cut around such things twice so in this series overall, but we'll get to another one later. Anyway, Pico comes in with the letter, and he gives it to Orin, and he finds out Zack wants Orin to do something for him.
Orin's a little shocked looking, too.
Yeah. You'd think nothing would surprise Orin, actually.
Except for this.
After a few days in the city.
Meanwhile, back at Ryoma's hospital, Michizane is, still
a little broken?
Sitting, yeah, well, a little bit broken. He's still sitting where Mai was murdered on a table. On the table.
Mm-hmm.
In that exact spot where he's sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Takatora is still haunting him. Of mm-hmm. course.
Rightfully so, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Saying what the audience all thinks. Which is, you know, basically the sum of it as he continues to further... and further breakdown. Cutting back to Kaito and his harem, I mean, Minato and Zack.
Yeah, I don't think that's enough to count as a harem.
How do we know? Are there rules for that somewhere? Can we look it up?
Well, for anime, you usually need like 4 or 5, at least.
Well, yes.
Otherwise, it's just like, a love triangle anime.
Meanwhile, while Kaito is sleeping, he is visited by Mai. If you add her in, does it become a harem?
No, because it's still only 3.
I guess. Kota?
Look, you're just reaching now. Can we just...
And besides, okay. the only one for Kaito is strength anyway.
And strength can't be part of a harem.
So anyway, Kaito and Mai talk in his dream. And we go back to that thing we were talking about, how Kaito is really kind of possessive and treating Mai like she is kind
of a piece of fruit.
Yeah, a piece of fruit or a prize to be won or a trophy or whatnot. But as you said before, it is more the fact that she is the one that has the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's not talking about Mai the person. He's talking about Mai the automobile.
Yeah, basically.
Yes, and that was really where I kind of disliked where this went, because just because Mai intrinsically possessed something that he wanted, she stopped being a person to him and just became a possession to be obtained.
Which is really the vibe you kind of get through that entire scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the question, though. Is he wrong? Is she a person still, or is she a thing that's sentient?
That's thanks to what Sagara, or not Sagara, Roshio is the one that shoved it in her. Oh, that's not wrong.
We're not really given a clear picture of what Mai has become. We don't know if she's still a person or if she's something else now.
Like my perception is that Mai, the spirit that is Mai, still exists and is just now embodied by the fruit.
But it's like obviously been affected by it, because she's not talking like the way Mai would normally go about.
Yeah,
it.
I mean, she's
her
not
mind
the
has
same
been open more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's probably still in Turne's Black History, so.
Well, yes, she is, actually, so. Oh. I wonder if that song gets old after you hear it for all eternity. It's a pretty good song, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. I'm not saying I agree with Kaito, but I'm not certain what he's doing is completely out of left field. I mean.
And, well, we'll get more to Kaito's motivations in a little bit here. Meanwhile, at the juice bar, it appears that Zack had asked Orin to make him an explosive. Which
oh.
Is, yeah.
Okay, so Zack wants to basically assassinate Kaito.
Right.
Right.
And Orin has this amazing line. What you're doing is heroic, make no mistake. Jesus Christ, Orin.
Like,
you're going to shadily assassinate your best friend. That's heroic.
I get
show is altering our perspective on what it means to be a hero, but damn it, man.
I get that point of view, but I think Orin's trying to like psych him up to that, because in Orin's head, Zack's gonna kill himself doing this.
Yeah, and Zack even says he's a coward springing a dirty trap on a man who trusts me.
Mm-hmm.
He knows very well that what he's doing is the most underhanded crap, which is kind of sad, because like Zack has been like the only one in the series who has been kind of untainted, I would say.
Right, and now Zack is basically willing to sell himself in order to bring this to an end.
Zack very easily could have been the main Kamen Rider.
Yeah, well, and like,
show, he probably would have been.
And like, I really dig Zack's actor. He was really good in the role they put him in. I think he could do a lot in like an actual leading role in a future series.
I mean, he's really underplayed and off to the side for pretty much the entire series up until these two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But it does well to set him up for what he tries to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Zack has been the only like flat out hero the whole time, and he's basically going to the ultimate extreme of like complete self sacrifice, even down to his principles, to actually end the fight.
Right, and because he hasn't been exposed to a bunch of the terrible stuff like everybody else has.
Which Code has always been the hero, but he won't sacrifice anything to do the right thing.
Not until he is absolutely positively forced under no other circumstances can he do anything else. Which we will again get to later. Meanwhile, Kaito is watching his little army grow, as well as Minato. When Zack walks up, you know, they chat a little bit. He leaves his present behind. Only Minato notices it, which throws the entire thing.
And we see the remnants of what used to be her good characterization.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is getting to the part that I hate about this episode.
Me too. So, I think most people, honestly.
Yeah. So, anyway, she tries her best to stop Zack, but is ultimately fails, and you can't just say, hey, Kaito, get out of the way. No. Instead, so she transforms, shoves Kaito out of the way, catches the entire explosion in her face, and is blown off the building.
Meanwhile, the explosive probably wouldn't have even been effective against Kaito because...
Probably wouldn't have. Because, let's be real, it is not the explosive that kills Minato. Because, spoilers,
no.
Yeah, she's dead.
But it's not the fall. It's the sudden stop.
It's the sudden stop.
Right.
So anyway...
But let's get... The point of all this really was to eliminate Minato from the field.
Yeah.
Because they ran out of shit to do with her.
And to
eliminate Zack. No, narratively, she can't be hanging around when it comes time for the final two of the fight. She had to go.
But the bad part is they could
have... It still disappoints me a bit.
They could have done that two episodes ago when, you know, her driver got fried. If they had just destroyed Ryoma's driver, then she would have been in the same position as everybody else. So it feels a little...
Possibly, but maybe she needed to die for Kaito's character to completely lose his shit.
Except he didn't.
I don't
like,
really.
I don't really see him as
having
already
lost kind of had lost his shit.
He was already going to do all this, and I don't think Minato dying changed it at all.
Minato either way was not influencing what Kaito was doing.
Yeah, which kind of makes her death seem really pointless, honestly. And
her death was pointless.
Yeah, she also did... the fact that you have Zack, who is technically one of the most heroic characters in the series, accidentally kills her. And nothing is ever made of it, because after the scene where Kaito carries her off, she's never mentioned again. Nobody cares at all, period.
Right.
Like, well, she literally just leaves the series and that's it.
It honestly doesn't bother me that much, because I didn't see her being that important to the main cast anyway. I mean,
no,
she
but
was fun,
kind of
certainly.
She wasn't important, but I kind of liked the character that developed for her.
And for being a female writer, it's kind of a
crappy way to be written out of the series.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit uncomfortable, actually, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
although we need to, I guess we should look at from the other side of it too, where she was a female writer that lasted over half of the series.
Yeah, this
and
is true.
Generally, and she was frequently useful.
Yeah, she had a very strong portrayal for over half of the series.
She is at the top of the very, very, very. Very short list that you can count on one hand, but still an unfortunate way of doing it.
No, I mean, she definitely needed, like, some better send-off.
It could have been much worse.
Yeah.
It could have.
It could have been simply that Kaito just turned, stabbed her, and then walked away, not uncaring.
Yes, this is true. I mean, it does show that Kaito...
It could have been they just forgot about her.
This does show that Kaito does give a crap still, even though he's trying to show otherwise.
It may have been handled a little less than delicately. I think the point of her death is still important, though.
And like,
she was the last thing that Kaito really cared about.
Remotely. But yes.
Yeah, but you could tell that he did care about her.
And
otherwise, he would have kept her around.
Yes, yeah, I mean, that's basically what this whole scene was. Zack and Minato were the two people left that he actually cared about enough to let them just follow him, even though they were essentially like completely useless to him now.
He's lost all ties to his former life. He has nothing left to lose.
This is true. He has absolutely nothing left to lose.
Yeah. So from that point of view, yeah, it was important for both of them to fall together, basically, and cut Kaito's ties. But I still think Minato's death probably could have gone a better way.
It actually would have felt, I mean, I hate to almost say this, but it would have almost felt better if they killed both Zack and Minato in the explosion.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but...
I think it works better with just her dying.
But I think it was important for Kaito to actually take out Zack for the cutting of the ties.
True.
Yeah, like, that represents a willful cutting of the last bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That means it wasn't raw from him. He couldn't try and fight to get it back. And he said, okay, enough of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's him making his choice to be the evil one.
Yeah. Right.
So, meanwhile...
And my earlier prediction was right. Both arms chained, Sigurd and Marika are out just in time for both to be dead.
So meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, we have Kota, who is staring at the Helheim fruit, just as Akira comes up.
Because, hey, she's still in this.
Yeah.
Speaking of female characters we forgot about using.
She
Except
had a name?
I think it's Akira.
I didn't know she had a name.
Yes, she's had a name.
Really? Oh, okay.
She's always had a name.
Is that a boy's name?
It
goes either way.
Yes.
Oh.
A lot of Japanese names can be used for boys or girls. I don't think there's actually very many that are specifically tied to one or the other.
There are some that are more feminine, usually.
Yeah, and some that are more strongly associated as masculine.
Yeah. Regardless, so Kota eats the fruit.
Nom, nom,
and
nom.
Nothing happens.
Because he's already
too far gone already.
Because he's already an overlord.
He's already
like,
an overlord.
Like, I had the suspicion before, but it's basically cemented Kiwami is his overlord form.
Yeah, well, as soon as he's been, you know, manipulating the vines, and
yeah.
I think that should have been a tip-off. Basically, it's from that point where Redoue went into his mind and screwed around with him. I think since then, when he accepted it, he has been, you know, fully an overlord.
Yeah, and Kiwami is his
form.
Monstrous form.
As much like Kaito can shift in and out of his.
Right.
So really the Loxies are just like, they're not even really.
Yeah, like the,
they're literally there to sell the toy at this point.
Yeah, Kachidoki and Kiwami basically just like eased him into the transition gradually.
Mm-hmm.
They were his lube.
I do like the scene between him and his sister, because it is the very last scene he has with his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And where he himself is realizing that, yeah, I've kind of gone way too far. I can't go back now. I can't do anything but this.
And he's completely right.
Yeah. But, you know, props to his actor also, as often said. His actor is very good. And has only gotten better since the beginning, I think.
Well, and like, yeah, that's true, but like...
It's a scene that you could easily screw up. But he sells it very well.
The easy way would be to ham-fist it, of, you know, tensing up your face and, you know, shouting all your dialogue.
And
but
like,
he plays it very close, but still you can see through it, though, that it's tearing him up.
That he wants to just lose it.
And all of the main cast have had really solid performances.
Yeah.
Like, this show was really, really well cast.
Even the secondary characters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just not as much. They didn't, or at least they did not get enough chance to show
anyone
the same
who had
way.
Something to work with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and going back to Minato, remember in her early episodes, basically her only trait was wide-eyed crazy?
Yeah.
I kind of missed like, that, to be totally honest.
Like, my theory on that is when they made the character, they did not really have, like, a personality in mind for her. And, like, the actress was not really getting a lot of direction how to behave, and she was just kind of making it up herself as she went along and evolved the character.
Because there wasn't a lot. She didn't do a lot in those early episodes, except look like she's going to, you know, cut your throat.
Eat your baby.
Yeah, or that. Yes. Anyhow.
But yeah, I mean that's a really good example of the what you have to work with thing, because I think that actress really made a lot of what she ended up working with.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of what Minato became came out of her.
I can see that. Yeah. Meanwhile, at the juice bar, the SDF suddenly charges in.
Because holy hell, there's military here now.
About damn time, you guys.
Although, to be fair, when you think about it, this entire second half of the series has probably only taken place over the course of a couple of days.
Oh, no, I honestly think we're into at least a few weeks.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been as long a period of time as there normally would be.
Because, like,
to be
fair,
Roshuo did kind of nuke half the planet with that damn missile attack.
Oh, half of
only
America.
Only America.
Only America.
And it was the West Coast. Who gives a shit about them?
We forget that when we talk about just everything that happens in Gaim. They nuked half of America.
Whoops.
Oh, I don't forget that. We start with street dancing, then nuked half the planet.
And, you, okay,
and then look what it ends
to,
with in a couple
that actually
episodes.
Brings me to a point. I remember somebody was saying to you, I saw somebody saying the other day, it's like, they really screwed up never changing the opening. And I'm like, actually, I think that works kind of great because it is such a dramatic difference between what the opening shows and what the show shows at this point.
It's kind of like towards the end of Zoo Ranger when you have all this dramatic and sad stuff happening and then Yoshi dancing on a mammoth.
Yes, but I mean, the contrast kind of works in this case, especially because like when you look at certain things in the opening, you see stuff that still kind of parallels with stuff like what happened later on. Like there is one part in the opening where it shows a cut between Kota going up to Mai and Kaito going up to the blonde Mai, which at first, you know, for most of the series, we're like, well, yeah, that doesn't mean anything. Then you get to the end of the series, like, oh.
And see, that's like one of the great
shot with Michi chasing after Takatora from behind.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the great evidence of how far ahead the entire story was planned. That all this stuff is front loaded in the opening from the very first episode.
Yeah, which is you can't say for a writer doesn't writer shows don't normally feel like they have a plan. Like so
well,
much.
Because it's been so long since we've had a writer series with this much of a structured story.
This is true. Mostly it is usually just, you know,
fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Monster of the day, the monster of the day, to monster of the day.
Well, I mean, not even like fly by the seat of your pants as such. It's like, okay, this chunk of the series is set aside for like episodic stuff.
And then we have the
overall plan for the series, which is going to kick in around the third quarter.
Yes. And basically after we get the final toy, then we can do whatever we want.
Right. Whereas Gaim, obviously, like, all the major story beats have been set up from day one, essentially, and it's followed along because it did so well there was no need for retools, there were barely any alternate writers involved.
Basically, the only times that they had an alternate writer was the Kikaider episode and...
Soccer
and the finale. Those three times.
Which was Soccer the second.
Yeah, but we'll get that.
Yeah, we'll get there.
In more ways than one, actually. But, yeah, so it's only those, and those were obviously all things that were not in the actual plan,
mm-hmm.
what Urobuchi was trying to write. Those are all literally
and because of that, I ended up, like, enjoying those episodes quite a bit, just because,
well, maybe
hey,
not
here's,
so much
a, here's
soccer,
a break.
The Kikaider episode was fun.
Well, I like the soccer episode too.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not like the soccer episode.
We actually talked about this when it aired.
I forgot all about that one.
You know, it was fun because it's Kaito just like, okay, I'm in this new world where everything's different. I'm going to be the best.
On the other hand, I will give them props for trying to actually, in the series, justify the movie. It's an alternate universe. Okay. We could assume that, but thank you for telling us outright.
And, like, the Kikaider episode's always going to get a pass from probably everybody just for Ryoma's brain in a robot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I have some friends that are actually, you know, really critical on Gaim, but even then they were like, okay, yeah, you can't say anything about that.
You say they're critical on Gaim, but you also call them friends.
Yes.
I think you need to reevaluate them.
Oh, come on. We all have one or two friends at least who aren't into what Gaim was.
Yeah, and that's completely valid. There is a certain it has this, you know, certain way of going about, and some people are not a fan of that.
Yes,
yeah,
we
I
call
mean...
them assholes and wrong.
Meanwhile,
I'll abide these people in my presence.
The self-defense force carts off everybody. Kind
of after first making sure to ask. Now nobody's taken an injury with plants growing out of it or eaten one of the fruit, right? Because if
like
so, we're gonna have to shoot you.
I do like that they ask that, and it's just like no.
Yeah,
it's got a little ominous.
Like, I mean, you know that all of them went through like a quarantine when they landed wherever they landed.
Yeah, stripped down.
Yeah. Stripped down, sprayed with herbicides.
Oh, God, it probably was herbicide, too. You know, there's some doctor.
Some Roundup.
You know, like in this world, there is some doctor out there who is saying, yeah, let's just, you know, put that in IV. See if that
works. Rioma?
Like, oh, the patient died. Well, they were going to die anyway.
Rioma?
Well, probably not now.
No. But before.
Kind of hard to cure what Rioma had.
No, Rioma would be the doctor suggesting to run an IV of Roundup.
He'd be testing it on himself.
Sadly, his brain went through his ass. So.
Oh.
Anyway, while they're being
though, if the last scene of the series was like someone taking Rioma's brain and keeping it alive inside a jar.
Well, when we get to the last episode, I'll mention something I had hoped to see along that line, if I remember.
Anyhow, Kota and Akira go to see them being carted off by the SDF, and he, you know, tells her to go on because he has to go take care of Zack and Kaito, and he just runs off. It's like, and again, point out that is the very last time he sees his sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because stuff's about to go down.
Going back to before, Kota would realize he can't go with them anyway because he's not really a human anymore.
Yeah, they would.
And they're going to find out.
Yes. So anyway, Kota goes walking as Mai kind of floats next to him, slash is probably being pulled along on a dolly.
Yeah. Although points to her for not falling over during that process, because that's not easy to do.
And then a moment that I really wish had not been spoiled by the preview, where Kota throws up his hands and summons like 500 Invis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that would have been cool to see in the moment, but it was still pretty cool.
It was still pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Kota and Kaito, you know, we have their West Side Story moment. All it needed was some snapping.
You're a guy all the way.
They meet to fight, and luckily there's no need for any,
caution?
Bystanders, collateral damage, caution.
Except left to hurt at this point.
The only thing left to damage is the patio furniture.
Yeah, now...
So I love that we've arrived at the scene that the series opened on, of their two armies charging at each other.
Yeah.
Effectively. Now, but Kaito does say some interesting things here, where what he basically admits is that he himself is weak, and that he's going to make a world where the weak will not be trampled. So for all his blustering and talk about strength and whatnot,
he was more talking about how it was working.
Yes, but Kaito himself, he has never considered himself, I don't think, to be strong, which I think actually explains a lot of his actions.
Yeah.
It's definitely telling.
Yeah.
Well, and Kaito's whole backstory is how he and his family were trampled by people stronger than them. And that's what drove his hate for Yggdrasil in the beginning. So it makes perfect sense that his ultimate goal would be to create a world where everybody is, like, either on equal level or where the strong just are not there to trample the weak at all.
Also, he's all about getting strength.
But he doesn't have.
He does not have it.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So if one considers that Kaito is somebody that, you know, necessarily looks down on somebody that is not strong, that is not necessarily the case because he himself is not necessarily strong. He just...
He hates himself.
Yeah, that is true. What I mean is, like, do you want to? Are you somebody who is going to try and gain that strength, or are you somebody that's just going to be, you know, satisfied with what you have?
Or are you going to try to gain strength, or are you going to use power to keep everybody weaker than you?
Yes. Which, you know,
he's a complicated man.
Kaito is really complicated, and it's no wonder that not everybody could quite grasp what he was about correctly for
subbing. Least of all TV Nihon, but that's another,
yes, well.
That's another discussion entirely. Because from everything I've seen, read, comparisons, whatnot, TV Nihon completely writes Kaito's character wrong.
They completely bungled him, and I'm really glad, like, I've been glad since Double when we've had alternatives to TV Nihon, but never more than with Gaim.
And never more than with Kaito's character specifically, because...
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, Kaito is, like, the deepest part of it, but, you know, Gaim has a lot of, like, concept stuff that you can easily get wrong and completely screw over the meaning of the entire show.
Like Sagara? So anyway, the point for the last like 4 to 5 minutes of this episode, we have a really freaking awesome fight between Baron and Gaim, where
Mangle Arm still exists,
and their invest armies consisting of every stage from rookie up to mega.
Yeah, and it's great because it's like it's not just Kaito and Kota fighting themselves. It is Kaito and Kota fighting themselves and fighting off their armies at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the big, huge, almost like a set-piece battle, but like it's the big spectacle thing.
This is the fight scene you expect to see in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little low budget, but yeah.
Even considering the repetitive invest, it's pretty spectacular.
It is. Well, you know, mixing in a few of the mega level invests kind of helps with the repetitiveness of it, because they only had like one of each type there. You know, so they had like their sub boss moments.
So yeah, I know.
I think what really makes the fight though is when they whip out the dandeliners.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or Kaito does it in midair.
Yeah. No, yeah. But it's great too that they had those. They still had
doing
those
the speeder bike chases.
Yeah, but I mean, it's great that they remember to use those, like from a production side.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, they basically
they
pulled out everything. They
and
pulled
also,
out every
it breaks
tool
up the
left.
Fight to add some variety.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But and... I mean, I just really appreciate they pulled out basically everything that was left in the arsenals and used them.
And mercifully, we don't get Jimba for more than like 30 seconds. So you know.
I was gonna say it's a shame they don't have anything in the budget left for watermelon arms, but they don't have that one anymore, do they?
Zach had it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Zach's the last one I had. So
but we
Zach
still didn't get Jimba Melon.
Well. Maybe
well,
for
Jimba
Melon's
power was to look exactly like Jimba Cherry.
Jimba Melon's power was to look like any of the other ones as needed.
Well, yeah. Let's be honest. Of the faults that the game has, Jimba Arms was not one of the best implemented aspects.
It was a fairly dull upgrade.
There's a reason that once he gets Kachidoki, you don't see much of Jimba, except when they like have to force, like, okay, we have to use the peach one, we have to use the cherry one once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so the point of Jimba at that point was we have to start off at a lower power form to drag the fight out a little bit longer, so it's more dramatic when he goes to his kill you right now form.
Yeah.
Yes, which was Kachidoki basically for half the series until he got Kiwami, which is kill you yesterday.
Plus, the stunt guy probably has a much easier time moving around in Jinba than Kachidoki. Yeah.
And an even easier time moving around in Kiwami.
Even easier time in Kiwami. Although, I mean, they did well actually spacing out the usage of Kiwami, because, like, he got it really soon after he got Kachidoki, but he also had hesitation towards using it.
Yeah.
Which I think worked better than, like, Eiji's hesitation towards using Puto Terra, where he just randomly could control it for no reason.
No, but, like, using Kiwami basically is just... Kiwami basically was Gaim's Garo armor.
Yeah.
It was pulled out just for finishers or really major fights.
Yep.
And it worked in that context. I mean, we all basically agreed, I think, Kachidoki is the superior...
Kachidoki is the best rider form in the series.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, so the fight ends with Kota going Kachidoki and Kaito going Overlord, and that's 45.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mickey, you want to do 46?
I can.
Good enough.
Jerry Energy Arms!
Alright, so where are we at?
46.
Yes, 40. Thank you. You're helpful.
Well, Kaito and Kota were fighting.
I need to get caught up to speed past the opening here.
Previously on.
Someone else do this.
Well, if not you, it's going to be
Paladin. Having technical difficulties?
I'm having trouble finding anything that isn't them just fighting back and forth.
Well, there's a lot of that.
Well, it starts with Mai and Sagara.
For like, I don't remember that.
5 seconds.
In the other world, the possible future once again.
I don't remember any of that.
In fairness, like the first six minutes are fighting. So
yeah. Yeah, the Mayan Sagra thing is basically just restating how, well, it's all down to them now, and
it's all downhill from here, folks.
One of the two futures is going to be cemented shortly.
So they've both gone Super Saiyan here into their ultimate form. They're fighting back and forth, and for inexplicable reasons, we keep cutting back to them into their rookie forms.
Well, we're watching them in the
actuality in Mai's perspective.
Yeah, basically
the Black History version.
Thank you, Formax. In the actual fight, I do like that. Like Kiwami starts off with a banana spear, which is kind of like adding insult to injury.
So, Kaito humbles Kota, slashes him across the chest, brings him to the ground,
spilling fruit everywhere.
Sarazi goes in for the killing blow with his Invis spear that looks like a giant frosted cookie.
Oh God, it does. I want to make a cookie like that now.
Oh, I only want some Oreos.
Kota goes all Hassan Chop with his arm and snaps it off.
And then we get one of the worst, like, stunt moves ever.
Well, no, what we get here now is Kota saying, Kaito, this is how you fucking use a spear. Pierce.
Oh my God.
Okay, so, but in the Mai's perspective version, where they're in their basic suits, you can see the spear tip is deflected toward the camera, so you can see that it's just running alongside the suit. Where in the actual fight, the sword blade is hidden properly, so it could sort of look like it's actually piercing his body.
Yeah, they don't quite.
This was obviously just a poke rather than say how Black RX always did it, which is okay, put the sword on the side away from the camera.
Yeah, and like I think that's something they probably caught, but since they had the pyrotechnics going off in the background, they could not actually reshoot because of the cost.
That's one of those things, like, you have one shot to do this, don't screw it. Oh, you screwed it up.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, we're kind of
stuck
with it.
We'll just fast cut around it.
Yeah, well, because it's Toei, they still went with it.
Wait, yeah. I mean, they had to. It would have been too expensive to reset the explosion and...
because it's Toei, yes.
But despite the mistake, it's still awesome that he killed off Kaito by spearing him.
Well, his own sword. That is
and then
true.
Then we get the touching final moments between Kaito and Kota.
And Kaito makes some hilarious dying faces.
He does. He. You know, of course it's Kaito. He's got to oversell it a little bit.
Well, yeah, that's how you know he's cross-eyed.
And acknowledges that Kota is the one that is actually strong.
Mm-hmm. Right, and, you know, with what we were talking about with the last episode, like, you know, that acknowledgement is actually pretty meaningful from him. He's acknowledging Kota is stronger than him.
Even after he says, why are you crying for me? He's like, I'll cry if I want to, damn it, shut up.
It's my finale, I'll cry if I want to.
And there we have Kota killing another one of his friends.
God dang it,
Kota. On purpose this time.
So here's one thing you do not want to be ever at any time. A
Kota's friend.
Kota Kazapara.
Yeah.
You have a, I don't know, about 20% chance he might murder you.
And a 50-50 chance of him even knowing he is.
Yes.
He really is kind of a monster.
He is, isn't he?
I believe that's the point they're trying to make.
Something
he's
like that.
A sugary, candy-coated, adorable little 4-foot-tall monster.
He's that tall?
Well, not candy-coated. Fruit-coated.
Yeah, he's like a Gushers.
Lots of fruits come candy-coated.
Of all the fruit candies to go for, you thought of Gushers.
Because when Kaito slashed him across the chest, it just all came spraying out.
Right. He bleeds fruit juice.
Yeah.
Which, you know, okay, well, this, Kamen Rider even at Gummy. This point, a
yeah,
year
he's
later, been... it's still kind of like, oh, okay, they still went there. Most serious moment possible. Oh, he's going to bleed fruit juice. Okay, sure.
Well, what else would he bleed?
Not blood, apparently.
Yeah, he doesn't have blood. He just has fruit juice.
Yeah, he bled all that out the other, a few weeks ago. Mitchie stabbed him.
Well, he had to make room for all the juice.
Yeah. Mitchie didn't even like really stab him that deep. It was just like it all exploded out because there was an outlet.
He's more fruit than man now.
Perfect.
So, Kaito dies in Kota's arms. Then Mai shows up, and Kota's like, oh, okay. He drops Kaito to the ground and walks away.
Well, yeah.
Well, he's dead. What does it matter now?
Oh, Jazu.
So, Mai presents him with her fruit.
Oh, my.
Wait, yes, we established that. It's Mai.
He goes all Chairman Kaga and just takes a bite right out of it.
And turns into the guy from Final Fantasy X.
Oh, God. Okay, here's the only part of this episode that I hate. That armor.
Okay,
I can deal with the wig. I can deal with the wig. That's fine.
So that's the Kachidoki undersuit with a silver Kurokage chest piece and, like, some Renfair stuff on the arms.
It was clearly not sized for Gakusano.
What is? The world isn't sized. The world isn't sized for Gakusano.
I know, but seriously, he was so...
I know, he's swimming in all of that shit.
The cape the material it's made out of looks very flat and starchy.
Yes, it does.
I think it's like a bed sheet from where the stunt crew was staying that night.
No. They had to starch it all up because otherwise it would just fall right off of him.
Yeah, they had to starch it because they needed it to spread, but he didn't have, like, shoulder width enough to make that happen.
Yes. But, you know, this scene does have a good thing in here, and where he and Sagara finally just kind of get to tell it like it is.
You're a dick.
Yeah.
Sagara's like, well, no, I'm not. I'm just kind of a force of nature. I don't really have motivations or... feelings
genitals.
Or goals. I just kind of am.
So he is Kyubey.
And see, like, ultimately, Sagara is one of the big letdowns I have with Gaim.
Really?
Because, well, just, like, changing him to portray himself as a force of nature with no actual motivation. You know, like, there was a lot that they could have done with him, like, you know, making him the final villain or something.
I don't even think they needed to necessarily do that. He says he has no motivation, but do you believe him? Is the question.
Oh, nailed on a chalkboard, man.
like that.
No, I think I already have one like that from the last time we mentioned nails on a chalkboard. I think Sagara is just like a misstep in how. Like the back half of Gaim ends up.
Going back across the entire series, there's no way he didn't have his own motivation.
No.
If anything, he's more. He's kind of sort of a great leader-ish. And here's the thing. Kota kind of failed in a way.
Kind of. But no. Everything feels like it kind of goes according to his plan.
Well, and that's the thing. Like,
plan up until Kota makes his decision of what to do with the power.
Okay, so let's look back at Sagara a little bit, though, because I think this is important. Mm-hmm. You know, Sagara was portrayed with the image of a snake.
Right.
He has had lines that basically do all but say, "Hey, I'm basically the devil."
Yeah. Or yeah.
You know, and
or
you know,
TV, or according to TV Nihon.
He is. Yes.
Yeah.
No,
but, like,
yeah.
I mean, you can see that kind of portrayal was basically the intent, at least part of the way along.
I still think it is honestly.
But, well, just, like, the way Sagara lets it end doesn't seem like... Like, you could easily turn it around where Sagra's whole goal was to have Earth be destroyed and overrun with Invis just because. And, you know, he tried to manipulate Kota into making that happen. And then when Kota does what he does and subverts that, Sagra would try to stop him and keep his goal happening. But that doesn't happen.
Sagra
just kind of
wanted to, just likes messing around with people.
Sagra just kind of threw his hand up in the air and went, oh, okay.
I honestly think it works better, though, without, you know, doing the necessarily cliched, oh, you didn't do what I told you to do. Now we fight. I think
also, with biblical allegories here, a common thing among them is that Satan can meddle, but he can't directly intervene.
Which is kind of all Sagra has been doing the entire...
Right, he's influencing, but he can't actually force anything directly.
Okay,
so,
I guess so.
He
set
you,
all this up
did.
To try and get Kota to choose the evil path, but Kota...
He can give you things.
That's a good consideration.
He can give you things, but you decide what you do with them. And he can influence how you use those things, but he cannot necessarily force you.
But still with that in mind, I still feel like Sagara's handling with, you know, the end part of the series just kind of fell short of what was being built around him the rest of the time.
I see. That's a valid.
I kind of agree with that in some ways, but... The whole end of Gaia, these last three episodes, I was wanting something a little bit more bombastic. But what we got is a bit more of a meta ending that makes you really think about what happened and why. And I'm kind of okay with that.
Okay.
It's a lot quieter of an ending than I was kind of hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
But it has me thinking about it. And that's good.
Okay.
But of course, where were you? In the summary.
Sagra is a
just
dick.
Said, no. Yeah. I'm going back to my home planet with Poochie.
Yes. speaking of taking bites out of apples, Coach is going to be doing that a lot for a while. yeah. So basically the implication being that Kota and Mai are Adam and Eve for a new planet.
And hey, kid, did you pick up on the symbolism yet? Let us beat you over the head with it another half dozen times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Sagra does basically try to push Kota to, okay, reshape this world to your liking and overwrite everything that's here. And Kota's like, nah, I got another idea.
He goes to Edenoi. Seriously. What is that planet looks like the Edenoi model.
Kind of, except with less polygon
and faces. They got masked riders on other planets.
Oh, shoot.
Okay, now I'm just thinking of Invis Furbus.
Furbus, maybe Furbus just is an Invis.
Exactly.
Oh, God. It all connects.
That's what the in-training form looks like.
Oh, jeez.
So, 3 months later.
Before that, though, Sagra doesn't waste any time as he's gone to another planet to already start up this stuff yet again. With creepy CGI got monsters behind him. Aliens. Dancing in front of him.
Is he hang around here where he lost? No, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, he's like...
And, you know, he's going on with his mission statement, you know, traveling from world to world, forcing evolution and such.
To his credit, though, he doesn't waste any time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, 3 months later.
3 months later, surprisingly, America has not nuked Japan back to the Stone Age.
Well, they probably can't. They're probably a little bit too messed up.
Yes.
It's true. And because plus, they got nuked back to the Stone Age.
And plus, what it was their own nukes in the first place.
True.
But thankfully, the juice bar is back in business.
Yes, and what's-her-name is still there not working.
Selfies.
Poor Bando.
And Jonochi is still looking for Hase.
Everything's all left, and cut outside to the wall of missing people.
I'll admit that scene on the wall with him, you know, posting up Hase's picture actually kind of got to me a little bit.
Yeah, it's
a hard scene to watch, especially because like when they cut back, it's like it's just a wall of nothing but missing people who are dead.
Yeah. And how many of those people became Invis? You wonder.
All of them.
Oh man, yeah.
How many became Invest? How many of them
were killed by
died,
Invest?
Died
how
from
many,
having plants grow out of them?
How many became Invest but are still alive but on an alien planet now?
Interesting point.
Yeah.
You'll notice no one's looking for Sid.
So while Junichi walks away, we see Yggdrasil Tower being dismantled.
So yay, the largest employer in the town is out of business. Woohoo.
It's just like when a Walmart closes. Zalame City's going to be a
when
ghost...
a Walmart closes, they don't dismantle the scalar system.
True. Walmart actually just activates the scalar system and levels the town before they leave.
Well, yeah, mostly, kind
well,
of.
Yeah.
What amounts to.
That's what that's what happens when people at Walmarts have tried to unionize.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Salt the earth.
Make sure nothing here can grow ever again.
So while
and they're still dancing.
Except for Zach, who's on a crutch.
Because he didn't die. Woo!
Yay!
I'm not certain how I feel about that.
Well, I felt really disappointed when, you know, he died there on the rooftop, so I was actually kind of happy that he ended up surviving.
Well, see, I never thought actually he was dead because I didn't Kaito did not strike me as somebody who is going to kill him unceremoniously like that.
We talked about that a bit when that was actually, like, in that moment of the show, but I think at that very point, he would have been at a low enough spot where he could have just killed Zack on the spot.
Yeah. He could have. And the implication was there that he did.
Right.
And he would see Zack alive again.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised.
It's not like it was handled. I wish it was more definite that he was going to survive or that he was definitely dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I honestly did not even consider the fact that he might have been dead.
Okay.
I'm kind of glad they didn't leave it ambiguous for people to debate over for months on end now.
God.
But, like, you know, considering that they killed Marika to get her out of the way for that last episode, it wasn't hard to imagine that Zack was also dead. Because at that point, they either killed everybody or shipped them out by helicopter, except for the last two combatants and Mitchie crying in the hospital.
Or just broke their drivers.
Well, and they still ship them out, though. Mickey, you wanna do your microphone over? I can't actually make you out over the
dialing. It's exceptionally bad now.
It's the last 6 weeks of Gamma, nothing but narrowing the playing field down.
Sure.
Yeah, it was. Necessarily so, of course, but
yes.
Because
otherwise it would have been a clusterfuck of an ending.
Right.
Sorry.
It's not like that's the first fuck that's occurred in this show, but
one was definitely intentional.
We're doing a lot better, though, and I appreciate that, so thank you.
Where were we? Oh, yes, let's get to the important part of the episode after we, you know, Mitchie's skulking in the shadows, twirling his mustache.
He looks like a hobo, kind of.
Good.
And I think he's supposed to.
The important thing is the cake shop's back open.
Yeah!
And Arden and Junichi are sporting a fabulous leather and lace look now.
That's
it's
a lot of
weird
frills.
That they have matching shirts now, but they
it's
do
the
look
uniform.
Well together.
It looks like they should be a queen.
I like that Arden got a happy ending.
Yes,
from Junichi.
Who saw that coming, honestly? He was destined to be killed around two-thirds of the way through the series.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed like a filler. He seemed like a filler antagonist at first.
Yeah.
And he just kind of stuck around to the betterment of things, I think.
Uh-huh. Orin is like the best character. He defies everything
back
you expect
to where he
about
wanted
him.
To be.
Yeah.
Orin was fantastic the whole way through, and his character evolution from antagonist to, you know, B team leader, really played well. I really enjoyed watching Orin through the series.
And he actually managed to turn Junichi into a
useful person.
Human, yeah,
he
human
turned
being.
A joke writer into a real writer.
Yeah, I mean, well,
yeah.
I mean, and
for
like,
a little while.
Like, the first quarter or so of the series, we were all speculating that Junichi might be a bigger villain because he really seemed like he was stepping that way. But
well, remember one of my speculations was that Junichi would end up stabbing Orin in the back, literally, and taking his stuff.
Yeah, and that would not have surprised me in the slightest with how Jonouchi was portrayed at first.
Right.
And yet, he managed to actually completely turn his character around.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's the legacy of Gaim in general, is, like, really good character arcs that go in believable directions that you don't expect them to. Because that happened with...
important because he is a queer character that defies the joke stereotype.
Yeah. I mean
he's funny, sure.
And the jokes are there, but...
But he's not there to be comedic relief. Solely. I mean, he's also... He has believable motivations. He is highly skilled. He is a badass.
I mean,
yeah, he is a serious combatant.
Look at the episode we just discussed. His role in that episode was to build a bomb to murder somebody with.
Yeah, he is a serious...
Something like that in a normal Kamen Rider show.
He's a serious combatant. He's a leader. You know, he has all the makings of, like, a flat-out main character. He was just... His purpose in the story required him to be secondary, though.
The only thing that kept him from kicking everybody's ass more was the fact he never got an upgrade. They should all be thankful for that.
Except that he didn't even need one up until the episode driver was broken. Up until that point, he was doing just fine with his first driver and his own
Roxy. Up until that point,
seat.
Again, like we pointed out last time, he took on two riders and two Envis, and it still took an Overlord to take him down, finally.
Yeah.
Also, his motivations throughout the entire show are completely believable and followable.
Yeah.
From the beginning, where he's jealous about the attention they're getting when he worked so hard to become an artist. And when he realizes what's actually going on, he comes around to their side.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that the other day, too, where, again, it's a completely believable character arc. When he finds out what's actually going on, rather than just what Yggdrasil has been telling him is the case... And, you know, him seeing the street dancers put on belts and pretend to have war games. You know, I mean, he completely changes around and it's fully believable.
Yeah, because he's not a bad person. He was just, you know, led astray.
Misled.
He was misled by Yggdrasil. And it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
He saw that there was a war starting and, well, he's a soldier.
Yeah.
And he chose his side.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, you know, surviving.
So he chose wisely.
Yes.
Where were we?
Where are we?
All that's left is Mitsuzane, I think.
We were at Charmant.
Yeah, so business has returned, and they're wondering, what's going to happen to Mitchie?
Who cares?
He's kind of much of a casualty as everyone else, and...
Which is honestly true. It's kind of impressive that they realize that.
He's not a casualty. He was a collaborator.
Yes.
We have rules about that kind of thing.
Yes, this is true. Everybody's just kind of like, it's almost like they want to turn, it's like, he couldn't have like really been stepping in. It must have been the Overlord, right? Right? Well, the Overlord's dead. I mean, Redua's dead. They can't prove otherwise, right?
I think this is another biblical allegory that's not handled quite as directly as the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
But the whole notion of forgiving sin.
Yeah, there's that.
That no matter what Mitchie did, they can forgive him and still love him.
So Kota is Jesus?
Well, yes, he ascended to godhood. He died, resurrected, and then left this planet. To a new heaven.
Oh, Christ, he did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Christ is right.
Oh, God.
Kota just died for our sins.
How many times do we have to say it?
Oh, God, it is
yes!
Madoka. Yes! I was trying to say, it is Madoka again. Crap.
So, yes, that's why everyone can try and forgive Mitchie.
Except for Pekko, but later for that.
Yes.
Screw Pekko. He sucks.
Well,
yeah, we established
Pekko's the one that bit. Well,
Pekko's the one who almost got beat to death at Mitchie's behest.
Dude, this guy almost killed me. You already forgive him? You weren't hurt that bad. You're fine now.
That is true. Like, of the people that are still left on the planet, Pekko is the one that really kind of that's not
suffered the most from him.
Really falls like, oh man, he is way gone. I think I will just not hang out with him.
You weren't on a respirator for that long.
He wasn't on a respirator at all. There was no hospital to take him to.
He only broke 3 of your ribs.
You didn't need that spleen.
We can get you a new kidney. Come on.
Remember, they got locked in a hospital, didn't they?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was Pecco again, too. Crap.
And Chucky, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so now we get to part of the episode that's like, we all knew was coming, but it's a little surprising they waited this long.
And yet it's I'm not disappointed. Takatora.
Hawk Tiger lives. Sort of.
So, Mitchie walks into the hospital room with Takatora's comatose body, and the doctor says, yes, we're quite lucky that the writers found him adrift at sea. He would have surely been lost if they not remembered to ride him back to life.
Remember, in case of an emergency, your driver can be used as a flotation device.
His driver, he didn't have his driver. It broke.
Shut up.
So, well, Mitchie whinges about, oh, the mistakes I made, oh, blah, 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 take it back, I wish you would be fine. Meanwhile, in Takatora's mind beach.
I find it kind of hilariously terrible that in his mind, he sees the ocean.
they said there was brain damage, right?
I was like, dude,
what's the last thing I remember? Water. Oh, okay, beach. That sounds nice.
It was a nice looking beach, I have to admit.
Yeah.
But yes.
It wasn't the usual
beach, the whale mutant or
Yeah, wait, hold up a sec here. What beach in Japan did they go to that had sand?
I was gonna say, at least this wasn't the like gravel and boulders beach they're usually at.
Well, there are some boulders.
There is that place that they had the final where they had the homoerotic punching match in O's.
That was
rocks. Yeah, you could have labeled it the fisting match in O's, and that would have.
It means the same thing, really.
Yeah.
So, through a vastly inspired lens, Kota appears in Takatora's dreamscape.
Sorry for barging in.
So, you weren't hey,
using
what's
that
up?
Brain power
how's
anyway.
Your coma?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Oh, I'm a vegetable.
Really? That sucks.
Oh, fruit.
How about I snap my fingers and make you okay?
No, Takatora's all like, I'm a vegetable, and Kota's like, hey, I'm a fruit.
Now, so, I will give Kota some credit here. He doesn't necessarily like sugarcoat what he's asking of Takatora. And he's like, yeah, this is kind of, you know, a crappy thing to be asking of you, but...
You know your brother who basically decided to murder you? Could you, like, maybe, like, I don't know, forgive him and, like, try to, you know, bring him back around, be a decent person again?
The thing is, though, I don't think necessarily Kota has to ask that. It's just
No,
that,
probably not.
It's just that, you know, Takatora can't do anything about it until Kota, you know, guy makes machina and everything.
Well, you know, Kota says it'd probably be, you know, more kind to let you sleep.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But
true.
I'm going to ask you to come back and help Mitchie.
It's an implication that helping Mitchie is a really hard task to be handing somebody.
Well, and I think the whole series has shown that, yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Because Takatora already spent Mitchie's whole life trying to make him a decent person and had already failed.
And Kota never gave him anything but friendship. And hey, look what happened there.
Yeah, Mitchie needs a backhand every now and then.
He needed a force in his life.
Takatora needs to ship him off to Orin for like a month.
Well, the problem is with Takatora's raising of him is that he raised him by rules and order, but never any compassion.
Right.
I mean,
and
he
Kota gave him
he
nothing
raised him by trying to shelter him from everything.
The sad part is Ryoma knew that.
Ryoma knew that. Sid knew that. Everybody except Kota knew that.
And Takatora didn't know it either.
Takatora, yeah.
Takatora thought he was doing a fine job.
Yeah.
Then he turns into a murderous little rat child.
No, Rat's the other dancer.
Yeah, Rat's cool. That's not a problem with Rat.
Okay, a murderous little, I don't know, what's a good vermin?
Possum. Right.
Possum, yes. A murderous little possum child.
What's a good vermin?
You can pass for
only
a
on superhero.
Intro quote.
Yes, I'm going to... I don't know exactly where that was, but I'm putting down a mark so I can go look for it.
You can pass for a possum.
So the episode ends with Taco Toro waking up.
And I would have been...
Yeah, that would have been a fine place to just, like, end the series on.
And apparently for Urobuchi, it was.
I guess so.
I'm accepting this is the canon ending of the series.
Well, for more on that, come back after the break.
You're listening to Superhero Time.
The new Nerf bow and arrow is coming your way, and it means business.
The power is pumping and arrows in your hand. Now your heart is pumping fire as quick as you can. Nerf bow and arrow. The enemy's coming, now they're in your sight. Nerf bow and arrow, to the front of the line, in the thick of the fight. Nerf bow and arrow,
the mightiest Nerf adventure ever.
Mr. Bucket.
That's right, I'm Mr. Bucket. I'm Mr. Bucket. Toss your balls in my top, I'm Mr. Bucket. Out of my mouth and will pop, I'm Mr. Bucket. Walk and run, I'm Mr. Bucket.
The game's Mr. Bucket. The first to get their balls into Mr. Bucket wins, but look out, because the balls will pop out of his mouth.
I'm Mr. Bucket. The balls pop out of my mouth. I'm Mr. Bucket. A ball is what I'm about. I'm Mr. Bucket.
Whee!
We're all going to run. I'm Mr. Bucket. Bucket the fun.
If I keep moving on.
Okay, so are we ready to get back to the show?
Let's do this thing.
Yes.
Gang bang. As soon as I find the right buttons. Oh, there. Gang bang button. So anyway, time for the actual finale of Gaim. Or, unless you think the actual finale is 46, in which case, it's time for tacked on extra Gaim. But we'll talk about that.
Okay, it depends on your
There's a term for that. It's called epilogue.
Well, except...
It's a low-key after thing. It sort of ties up a few loose ends.
Except it really obviously wasn't planned by the writer, considering the writer had nothing to do with it. So it depends on your perspective there, how much you want to.
Well, not very much, I think.
Well, I see nothing in this episode that really precludes me from thinking that it's not canon.
I mean, it doesn't, like, the way it's structured, you don't really have to acknowledge anything that happens in this episode if you choose not to.
It just, I don't know, it feels... Something just feels off about the entire thing.
Okay, well, let's bullet down to one point straight at the beginning here. Comrade Jam is just kind of... What? Why is this here?
Terrible?
Yeah.
That's kind of my point, what I was saying earlier. That it feels like someone in Toei was like, okay, we have to have a evil final villain for somebody to blow up in the last episode.
It feels that's kind of like the... DuPont that they had in the last episode of Double.
Okay, Ocean.
Except that was kind of you know, just another DuPont that Chitara was tracking down.
Okay, here's more of what I get out of it. This episode has a lot of good character things that wrap up character arcs. However, they decided we can't air an episode of Kamen Rider without any fighting sequences or somebody from the fight because that would just freak people out.
Or more
do
to the
something
point,
something kind of cool to throw it in there, so we can get the good character bits out there.
Of all the unnecessary things in this episode, Jam is the biggest.
Yeah, and he takes up a lot of the episode.
But the important things in this episode is how life goes on after the series ends. What happens to these characters? How are they going to progress forward? The Jam part isn't important, and that's what I feel most people are focusing on. Is the only thing that's going on in this episode is, oh, there's a new Comrade Jam and he's lame. Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I don't know about
Takatora and Michi.
But let's go... Let XV go. A little ways first.
Sorry.
Well, don't expect too much. Okay, so we open with an Invis attack, and oh, hey, look, it's Gaim in orange arms, and he's come to fight.
In his old Gaim jacket.
Yeah, he's wearing his gang colors again. It's a nice callback. So, you know,
that is a nice immediate tip off to say, oh, this is not present day.
Ah, well, and then after we cut through the explosion and the logo and no opening, we get the second tip off, which is Mitchie's hair.
Yeah.
As he comes running in too late to be of any help at all. Because Mitchie.
Yeah, I should remember the because
Mitchie.
And he's not trying to stab anyone in the back.
Or shoot them or anything. Yeah. So we Kota runs off because he's late for a job interview, which, again, the whole thing is basically like, okay, so remember what was going on, like, pre-episode 20?
Or pre-episode 12.
10.
10.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And there's the whole crowd behind Mitchie saying that beat writers are the real villains and they're just doing this to show off. And so in the garage, Mitchie and Kota have a nice little chat, which ends with Kota trying to choke the life out of Mitchie because he's precognizant today.
Although it is a bit of a callback also to how, like, in the first quarter of the series, Mitchie was kind of the secondary writer.
Well, and they're also having the conversation they did around that same time where Mitchie's like, you really don't have to be fighting and taking this risk on yourself. You know, we can stop doing this and let someone else deal with the problem.
You can easily see that between where that first arc ended and where the second one began.
Yeah. But no, this is just Mitchie flashing back to arguably happier days. 7 months after what the subtitles call the destruction of Helheim, although I think that would more just be the removal of Helheim from Earth. I doubt Kota wiped the Helheim planet to...
It's more the destruction of the world.
Yeah, I guess they didn't want to
actually... destruction of the west coast of the United States.
Oh no, the whole world got jacked up.
Yeah, I mean, there was invest
America
everywhere.
America got nuked, but the rest of the world was attacked too, so...
Yeah. Although, you know, if it was mostly, like, rookie-level invest, there is the possibility that, like, military forces could have at least held them at bay for a while. Like, it probably wasn't...
On O's, bullets don't stop monsters.
Flamethrowers, on the other
hand. Yeah. I imagine that there was more than just that.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the majority of the invests that there were the rookie-level ones.
And most of them flew off with Space Jesus.
All of the Helheim stuff flew off when Kota left. That was the whole point. Take every bit of Helheim with so the world would go back to normal-ish. So the world wouldn't end, basically.
Mm-hmm.
An imperfect solution, but, you know, it gets the job done, I guess.
Better than the alternative.
But yeah, Mitchie's living with Takatora, who's basically made a full recovery. No evident brain damage anymore, except that he's living with Mitchie.
Space Jesus asked
him to look after him.
And, you know, Takatora asks a loaded question, so, Mitchie, how are you doing? Which seems like a really polite way of saying, hey, Mitchie, how crazy are you today?
Have you taken your medication?
6 out of 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want to pick up this kitchen knife and stab me in the throat?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want to shoot me in the back?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how far into the ocean do you want to throw me this week? So Takatora is saying that, yeah, Helheim may be gone, but the world's still kind of fucked up. And Takatora feels like he has an obligation to help, so he's getting ready to leave for America because, obviously, one Japanese businessman can make so much difference in a nuked-to-death country.
Well, you gotta think.
And leaving Mitchie alone again will help him out so much here, too.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta think. Japan's a lot better off right now, so...
Well, it is. I mean, it avoided getting nuked, despite the best efforts of some people.
Yes.
No, I mean, Japan, America. Or at least Zaome City's recovery is kind of remarkable. As life appears to have gone pretty much back to normal, including having regular, you know, dance routines. And even the meager audience is getting involved in it, too. No, seriously, there's like 5 times as many dancers as there are people watching.
Yes.
Of course, I guess that's what happens when every remaining dance team is dancing at the same time.
Yes.
But yeah, Mitchie's just kind of hanging around, and they notice him, and they're like, hey, come dance with us, come dance with us, and that's when Pecco's all like, you guys, seriously? He tried to murder me.
He's my spirit animal.
What is wrong with you people?
again, he is the audience in that scene. He's like,
yeah.
No.
He has yeah. a point, you know.
He does. And, you know, credit to his actor also, because, like, from the first moment they notice Mitchie, his actor has shifted into that mood. Like,
yeah.
you know, you can see all of that in his face before he even starts reading
the
line.
He remembers that beating quite vividly.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he remembers standing off to the side and watching that stunt person get beat. But then a locust kind of materializes on someone's shoulder, and I suppose it's kind of ominous. Hey, remember the last time we saw the locusts? In the soccer episode?
No.
It was a soccer episode.
Soccer.
Yeah, soccer. Soccer?
Oh, what?
So, Takatora and Kota's sister, who, according to Mickey, has no name, are sitting at Charmont talking about old times. And saying, you know, brothers are kind of weird. Mine ran off to go and, like, start a new race of beings on some distant planet. Yours tried to murder you repeatedly.
And everyone else you knew.
Yeah.
And he your brother tried to murder you. And my brother.
Oh yeah, and kind of hooked me up to a machine to power evil alien technology.
You turned me into a Matrix battery.
No, your little brother turned me into a Matrix battery.
So Orin
is also another good sample of Bravo's happy ending in the series, because he actually did get to meet his radiant melon.
Yes, he knows who his melon was. And serves him cake.
I'm gonna extrapolate from this that this is the beginning of a beautiful relationship between the two of them. Because Takatora is not offended by Orin. He's pleased with him.
Why not?
Incoming slash fic.
Or is Takatora just like politely ignoring that part? Like, I can't tell if it's just like Takatora's being polite and trying to ignore that part of it, or, you know, he's just like, yeah, whatever.
Maybe he just wants free cake.
With Takatora, it could really be either way.
Have you ever seen Takatora take interest in a girl?
Not particularly.
Only with all the girls he's had available to him, like
Minato?
Stupid Mai and Crazy Marika and No Personality Akira.
He was never around Mai, I don't think. I don't think he ever actually shared a scene with Mai.
No. They never seemed to meet face to face that we saw.
But that might have actually been some interesting interaction.
Yeah, I don't think so. That's probably why it never actually was shown.
But the point is, he compliments Orin on these magnificent desserts that he has clearly outdone himself.
Ah, but none. It was actually Jonouchi's creation. And then as he plops himself down into a chair, Orin smacks him in the back of the head with a tray as a swarm of locusts comes up to attack.
But
not
wait.
Ass off at Jonouchi's misery.
How was Jonouchi able to finally achieve pastry perfection?
Fort because Max? He never gave up.
Yes.
And this is true.
Yes.
This is why I'm glad this episode exists, because of a moment like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is the whole point, like you said, is just, you know, tie off these character threads and show what's going on with them after everything's over with.
And the Jonouchi scene is perfect because it shows how he evolved from a joke, nothing character, and he's actually had an arc, and he's matured, and he's become a successful adult. That is incredibly satisfying to watch as a viewer.
You could probably argue you saw that at the end of the last episode, too, in a way. This is more pronounced.
In a way, but this also shows more beyond just the fighting of him as a real human being that's not kicking ass.
Yeah, this is like, you know, Jonouchi in his real life now.
I'm not saying the episode is completely without merit. It's just a lot of it feels
all the jam stuff,
which is half the episode.
Speaking of which, so a crowd of people is running away from the swarm of locusts, all running past Mitchie, who's heading toward the trouble, and encounters the girl who the first locust landed on, who is now being possessed by the spirit of jam, apparently.
Because the spirit of one of the movie writers.
Yes, spirit of the movie writer that we have not seen. Because
yeah, that would probably help.
Luckily, you know, Luckily, Mitchie hasn't seen them either because alternate universes. Like, you're after the wrong guy in the wrong universe.
Yeah, well, okay, it looks the same, so.
Pause. That's question. Would this episode make more sense to us if we had seen the movie? Would it feel more appropriate?
I don't know, because, again, the movie doesn't take place in the Gaim world we know, does it?
And, like,
but
I think
it would feel more endearing to us if we had some kind of connection to this.
Well,
to
and I think for the very fact that they made it a different person in the suit than the person that was in the Apple suit in the movie, I think that kind of removes some of it.
Yeah.
They're basically just using that element to, A, justify reusing suit elements, and B, tie back to something that already existed instead of creating something from scratch to be the final threat.
Yeah.
So I'm not
disagreeing with you, but I'm thinking that maybe if we had some kind of connection to the character in the movie and the whole concept of what's going on, we might have a 10% softer view of it.
I think that would only be the case if they actually had the actor from the movie come back to do this role.
Yeah, then I could see it. As it is, I mean, it's no more than I know that, well, that exists.
Yeah.
Which I already know.
I wonder if the actor wasn't available.
Well, it probably was a case of, like, well, we could get this extra to read these lines, or we could pay for this person that we could only get for the movie in the first place. You know. I mean, I'm sure there was, you know, practical consideration against it, but yeah, I think having the same face for that villain be the only way to actually have a connection seeing the movie or not.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we all just use our imaginations and pretend the actor is in the scene, would we like it better?
No, because I still don't think so. I still think it feels like it's out of place.
It still feels tacked on and... really,
like we saw with
it doesn't go anywhere after that.
At least with the soccer episode, we saw that there was some capacity for jumping dimensions with this, so that part's not like out of left field. And I think the same, like physically the same character, I think it would have made sense. You know, he traveled to
thanks to the soccer episode, this does not completely. That's the only thing that makes this feel like, okay, well, I can see where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't really make it feel any less anymore.
Oh, I've just figured it out. If this episode had not aired now, but was in like a separate DVD release 6 months from now, as called Kamen Rider Gaim Returns, like the Double Returns movies,
mm-hmm.
it would have been fine.
I think people would have accepted it a little bit more that way.
But there would have been more to it also than a 20-minute episode.
Right, but the whole concept of just coming back for a little bit more extra, of wrapping some things up and, you know, tie something from the past a little bit into it.
Actually, like, if they had held this for Movie Wars also, where they could have done the same thing as Gaim Returns, you know, expand it out a little bit more, have a little more money to put into what they're doing, you know, that would have helped also.
I think coming directly, it's like you had two time skips within a matter of like 10 minutes, effectively, between you jump 3 months and then you end the episode, then you jump another 7 months and they start next. I think that coming right on top of each other also doesn't help it any.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that I see what you're saying.
But if we had watched this 6 months from now, I think we would have liked it a whole lot more.
Quite possibly. Because at least then the time jump would have felt natural.
And the obvious difference in writers would not have felt as pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can tell it's not written how...
It's disconnected from the main story.
Yeah.
But then it's also supposed to be disconnected from the main story. So we can't really fault it for that, can we?
Yes. I don't really fault it for being disconnected from the overall Gaim story. Like, that's not part of what the problem I have with this is. So, I don't really hold that against it.
Okay,
but anyway,
so Jam has come.
yes. Yeah, that's right. We're like 5 minutes into the episode.
Let me just mark that one down. But yeah, the entity possessing the girl, now calling itself Jam, attacks Mitchie and beats him and leaves him curled up on the street. While the Locust
just
is confronted,
like life, really.
While the Locust is confronted by Zangetsu and the B team,
which is kind of that. This is the point where it is kind of cool how the four of them just kind of are like, okay, we're gonna try and kick your ass.
We don't have the belt, but it was never about that.
They're like, and Orin and Jonouchi. Orin Takatora are literally the two best fighters. So
yeah. Yeah, and for either of them, fighting does not rely on having the suits or the belts or anything.
Yeah, and even Zach comes along.
Yeah.
And they all get their asses kicked. But still, it's, you know, points for trying.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to see. It's an important thing for, especially Jonouchi's character. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going in knowing he does not have any extra ability, and he's still fighting right alongside all of them with no hesitation.
Even Zach is probably better fit for it than him.
He's never giving up.
Yes.
And of course, we have our flashbacks to all the drivers being broken because, you know, Kaito wanted to ruin everything.
Thanks, Kaito.
And he almost did, damn it.
But yeah, Zach makes a good showing too, coming in after everybody else is down and actually, you know, landing a couple hits but doing basically nothing.
That's kind of all Kamen Rider Knuckle was there for, you know?
Well, yeah.
I kind of love this dynamic, though. Like, these are the heroes we have left with, of Orin and Jonichi and Zach.
Yeah. Team Bravo and Takatora.
Yep.
But Jam stops short of killing them, says there's no rest for you yet, so they have to suffer first.
Oh, good.
And it promises that they're going to die just like the Overlord species did.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, we haven't heard this before.
Yeah. Not very original. So they're
Takatora,
back in...
Can we get some of those groovy mass production belts?
Yeah, I do like that Bando brings that up, because it is a good... I mean, it's a logical point to jump to. It's like, didn't you just like have a whole army of those guys?
Well,
yeah,
we
like
kind of
thousands of those things. What happened to them all?
We decommissioned all of those.
And even though we could make
that's just code for saying Kotick killed them.
There were still some left after he got Kachidoki.
They killed all three of them.
Yeah, a few of them ran away.
There are four of us. We only made three suits. No, they're all gone.
And he's like, well. We could use Ryoma's blueprints to make the drivers again, except we kind of destroyed all the lock seeds. Oh.
And Helheim isn't here anymore, so you can't walk into it and get more.
And I guess they don't have any lock vehicles to go to the Helheim planet and get
those
more
are lock
either.
Seeds, so...
Yeah.
And
no, but I mean, there's like no... Yeah, well, I mean, they had... There were still some left hanging around... That weren't in Yggdrasil when Sid went on his little spree, but...
I think we can assume that Kotan and Kaita's bikes were destroyed in the fight.
Probably, and if Michi still had one, he probably doesn't anymore either. Like, there was never a clear accounting, I don't think, of who had exactly what in the lock vehicles. But, I mean, this point we can just assume all of it's gone.
It's safe to assume, because they're telling us it's all gone, that it's all gone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, no, I mean, it's like... They brought that up before, but it's like, well, what you have is all that's left, but now they're not even suggesting that.
Yeah,
but yeah, Takatora basically says, we destroyed everything so that there couldn't be another Yggdrasil to use them for, you know, bad purposes. And with the forest dealt with, who thought we would need more drivers? So, oops.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
That stuff was commentary on Japan saying, you know, maybe America should have, like, destroyed their nukes after they bombed Hiroshima and killed off, you know, the Manhattan Project.
Uh-huh. Or it's kind of like that logic that always bothers me in Endless Waltz for Gundam Wing. It's like, we're going to destroy all the mobile suits. Okay. Oh, God, they still have some mobile suits.
Shit.
Although, to be fair, all of Endless Waltz is an exercise in bad logic.
Yes, it is. But I'm still saying that is the logic we're lurking off of here.
So Jonouchi
Wing in general just an exercise in needless drama.
So Jonouchi ambushes Takatora outside his house, and is like, "Dude, I totally knew you had one hidden away." Now I should point out that watching the live stream at this point, I was so hoping that Takatora would pop open that briefcase and there would be like a hologram Ryoma head come out of it.
That does seem kind of like wasted potential, and it's definitely something he might have done.
Well, there's a lot of wasted potential.
Seems like now Ryoma would have done it, but why would Takatora hang on to that?
Well, who else would he entrust with Ryoma's brain?
Maybe that's the plot for the eventual guy in Returns.
Yeah, can we get holographic Ryoma's brain?
No, they need to go a full familiar solid and have Ryoma possess Takatora.
No. They bring it's a Hokkaider, but with the brain hologram inside him.
Makes less sense.
It's just a hologram of Ryoma's brain.
Yes.
So, Takatora doesn't want to let any of the other ones, any of the others, get involved in this fight. So he's going to take the last mass production belt and Kurikage Lockseed and go fight himself. But Jonouchi says he hasn't fully recovered yet, and Jonouchi kind of has a debt he has to repay. So he snatches the case from Takatora and finally asks the question that he should have asked like half a series ago. Whatever
or 7 months ago.
Whatever happened to Hase?
So, at least he knows now.
The point to Takatora, he doesn't beat around the bush.
Yeah.
He does kind of deny that he was one who tried to kill him.
Oh, no, he just says that...
Clothes only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
It was Cid who did it.
Yeah, I mean, Takatora just admits that Yggdrasil took him down. He doesn't really point to any personal responsibility anywhere.
No, he does not. And, you know, okay, I can understand why Jonouchi would have wanted to do this. I fully get that. On the other hand, this probably would have gone a lot better if it was Takatora or Orin.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have gone a lot better, but it would have lasted more than, like, 25 seconds.
It was just a pinecone seed, you know, which, you know...
Yeah.
I've probably gained more destructive potential by picking up a baseball bat and football pads.
This is true. This is true.
But still, it is a fantastic big damn hero moment for the lowest rider in the series to
it's
been a while
do something noble.
It's been a while since I saw Kurikage. Is that the movie one?
No, because that would have a Genesis stick. Driver.
I saw one in the actual show that I forgot exactly its coloration.
Shin Kurikage had two blades on the spear, I think.
Okay.
And, of course, I think the only other difference was a Genesis driver.
No, right. It was a...
They can't have one of those lying around.
Yeah, it was a Genesis driver. Okay, so never mind.
Yeah. Now, like, my disappointment with this is, Jonouchi can't defeat Jam alone. That would defeat the whole point of the episode, but he could have at least maybe taken out the locust monster. Had, like, one success before getting the driver.
That would have been nice, yeah.
I mean, he needed that moment, I think.
There's no reason why they really couldn't have done that and still kept the rest of the episode.
Yeah, it's not like there weren't more locusts.
Yeah.
You know, let him appear to have a victory for a moment just to bring the character to the end of his progression.
Take out the Invis and have Jam take him out, then jump to the next part.
Yeah.
That would have been better. I'll agree to that.
It's just like...
Well, otherwise, Jonouchi... it feels really kind of pointless.
Yeah, Jonouchi does all this and accomplishes nothing.
That's a lot of setup for literally nothing. All, you know, points to him for having the balls to do it, but...
And it's kind of, again, like, you know, Michi with the hell fruit.
Yeah.
Which was, like, a lot of build-up to basically nothing.
Okay, but why did they write this in the first place, then?
I don't know.
Still time.
Okay, well, because they need to have someone fight the monster and get their ass beat. The only way they can do that is by having a belt. The only way they can have a belt is by having Takatora. But they can't have Takatora show up, and then when Mitch needs to show up and save the day, because that's going to create too much dialogue for them to talk out between themselves.
So instead you can have Mitchie waltz in and basically ignore Jonouchi entirely.
Because that's what he would do anyway.
Yeah, because it's Jonouchi.
You can't get the belt to Orin because Orin would win. Can't get the belt to Zack because Zack would have history with Michi.
Right. Jonouchi's the only one who doesn't really have a direct connection or actually care that much.
Basically, all this is set up as specifically as to establish the monsters as a threat by having them defeat a rider.
Yeah.
Therefore, Mitchie can show up and begin the second phase of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just like needed someone to jaw.
Yes. But yes. They needed Junichi to job, but however, how they let him job, though, was nice and heroic, though, which is cool. They didn't have him just steal the belt from Takatora when he wasn't looking. Takatora let him walk away with it because what he was doing was, you know, righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it elevated him as a character. So even though he didn't accomplish anything tangible, it helped his character and it moved the plot along to the next beat in the story.
Which is where Mitchie has come and become Ryugen and is getting his ass kicked now.
Because he has the last Genesis driver.
No, the last Sengoku driver.
Well, I mean, technically, Jonouchi's did not break that we saw, so...
Jonouchi's driver broke.
Did it break?
Okay, it flew off into, like,
flying away, so I'm
four,
assume that
like
one
four
breaks.
Pieces okay, flew away from
never
him.
Never mind.
Like, I saw that in the live stream, too. That belt was gone.
Never mind. I missed that.
So Ryugen actually manages to pull the upper hand somehow.
He manages to shoot someone.
Twice. He manages to shoot two people. He shoots the locust down to the ground and then aims for Jam's belt and throws him to the ground. And then is ready to basically blow Jam's head off until Jam untransforms. And for some reason, Mitchie is now unable to just kill people willy-nilly.
Well,
yeah,
how in front of the girl.
Yes. Really have, when
the, girl,
really hurt,
the girl's but... facing him. He can't shoot her in the back.
It's true. He can't shoot somebody where he's looking them in the eye. Because he is still a little possum.
You terrible cunt.
Yeah, so, you know, girl basically forces him to untransform somehow. And the locust starts beating his ass again. And it's probably going to kill him.
Slowly.
Yeah, slowly. And there's probably a segment of the audience cheering at the prospect of that.
But wait, what's this choir of angels I hear?
And the other part of this episode, I think it would have worked better.
Oh, look, personally. It's Apple Meteor.
I personally would have honestly liked it better if Mitchie had actually won on his own, to be honest.
Okay, so I guess
maybe
this
he
is...
didn't. Kota's just there in his mind like Takatora was.
That would be great, but Mitchie never saw this, so he wouldn't have no frame of reference.
Unless Kota showed up in his mind.
True. Okay, so I guess this is as good a point as any to go over like what I would have preferred to see happen here. Where Kota does not appear physically in this form, but basically, like, Kota knows what's going on and appears just enough to give them at least lock seeds to let Mitchie and Takatora and Team Bravo take up and all fight.
Yeah.
Like, not have Kota come in and help save the day, but give them the means to do themselves and be the new heroes for the city.
I can't imagine why they didn't do that, because it would have been much more expensive to give new... suits and set up
not
more
new
fights
suits.
And everything.
Just,
but yeah, I do think that's a good idea. Yeah.
Not even new suits, just the same things again.
But the thing, what was I trying to say? Go on.
Kota
would not do that. Kota's all about taking the burden on himself. He would not put the burden on them to have this power and defend.
That's true.
But if Kota's in a position where he can't, you know, keep coming back to save things every time something goes wrong.
Kota's a god. He can do what he wants.
At the end of the day, the only reason he comes back is because they couldn't have an episode of Kamen Rider Gaim without Kamen Rider Gaim.
Yeah, I know.
Basically, yes. But Kota wouldn't have dumped that responsibility off on someone else. He would assume the responsibility on himself to be the protector when needed.
Yeah, but
also,
like...
There are ways, if you shift around some scenes and whatnot, to make it so that way that would be believable if they were all still coming out and trying to fight again, and they kept coming out and trying to fight, and it was obvious that they were going to keep doing that. There are ways to make that work, potentially.
But secondarily, and more importantly, though, this is about Kota's continued quest to redeem Mitchie.
That's true.
Well, and
it's
see,
about,
like,
it's about him fighting side by side with him to prove to him that I still believe in you. You can still be the hero.
And see, I think, though, my way would have been able to do the same thing. It would have given Mitchie the redemption because Kota would have basically given him his blessing to do this as, along with bringing the others back to help. You know,
basically,
Mitchie would have gotten his redemption and all the others would have gotten a good end to their character arcs. They would have been useful and have would have graduated to become the A-team, basic, like, you know, the first stringers instead of being the backups.
Which is what Kota, which
so you're running
was,
SPD.
So well before that was basically Kota, Kaito, and Minato, effectively.
Yeah,
but also that's implying there'll be threats to fight in the future. The way that the series ends implies that this is the last threat.
I know. It's just like I just feel like they could have done more to wrap up the other writers' stories in a more positive way.
Instead of just leaving them
with just a little minor difference, because I like for me it would be more important for storytelling to have all of the leftover writers work together by themselves and beat Jam instead of having Kota come and do it alongside Mitchie only. You know, I get that the main thrust here is redeeming Mitchie and, you know, having him graduate to be the hero now. But I think the others still could have been involved in it too and not taken away from that. That's my disappointment with this, is just that everybody else got pushed away. You know, and especially with the way Jonouchi's part ended up being, how that ended up coming out kind of really cemented that in my mind. You know, all the others are being, like, sacrificed, essentially, just to give Mitchie this one spotlight, which he could have had anyway.
I can't really argue against that.
I think it's an interesting character interpretation, and yeah. I'm not entirely disappointed, but I think these are also angles that should have been explored in this last episode.
Yeah.
The thing about all three of these episodes to me is that at surface value, they're not that great, but the fact that we're able to think about them and discuss things and look past what's actually shown to us and see the reasons why and extrapolate from them why that is and why this is,
yeah,
this is what makes it a satisfying ending to me, is because
it's what makes it a satisfying series overall, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Is because it's more than just, oh, they beat the big bad and now everyone's happy. It's like, we got to piece together why this works.
The thing about
put forth effort on our end.
Thing about Gaim and because, like, you might have individual episodes that are really good or so forth. Like, say, for instance, the episode where they fought Roshuo. That was a fantastic episode. But Gaim overall is better more than any other series lately, in the past couple years. As a whole, it makes each part makes the other parts better.
Yeah, because everything builds on everything else.
Right.
You get increasing layers of complexity, but it never becomes so, like, impenetrable that you can't put it all together without outside help. Like, it's not a case of, to use the TV tropes, it's all in the manual.
Yeah, and Urobuchi has done stuff like that before. But
and these, we could have wanted more from this episode, but if we remove that, what we got is really more than we ever really deserved.
I think the fact that we
or could have expected.
We do sit here wanting more is almost a testament to the characters that they're still dealing with.
Yeah, I think so, but too.
Would we have ever expected to get this much closure on Oren and Jonichi?
Nope.
Not in a normal series.
No.
That we got this at all is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I agree.
And they didn't pull any, you know, last minute, like, oh, he's gone now, he can resurrect people. No.
They didn't even do a cheap thing where it says, okay, I did that world thing, I'm back, I'm just going to hang out with you guys now.
That's the one thing I was
And they didn't do the reset button like I feared, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Like we were all afraid of, honestly,
there are a lot of elements in the series where Urobuchi is very derivative of himself. So you were really sitting there expecting, they're going to reset, aren't they? They're going to reset.
Well, the thing is, with as much shit as they ruined, like, in the entire planet.
Yes.
And they why wouldn't they reset it?
Wow. I mean,
yeah, and that's the other thing too. They like pay service to that because Takatora is going to go and try to help fix, like, arguably the worst off part of the world from all this.
America.
Yeah. Because, you know, Takatora, I think, feels personal responsibility, even though most of what happened was not actually directly his fault.
Well, I mean, in fairness, there's nobody really else to take responsibility.
No.
This was a hell of a series.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, anyway, Kota comes back and drives the locust infestation of the girl, which then re-manifests itself as Jam anyway, because, reasons.
Because they need a final fight.
Yeah. They need
which
a final
is an
fight.
An awesome final fight, but still.
And hey, to your mentioning of Kiwami being his overlord form.
Yeah, because he doesn't even use a belt. Yeah, he just shifts the same way Kaito did after he became an overlord.
He's had 7 months to practice.
Probably not even a matter of practice anymore.
And, of course, they have to use the theme for the final fight in the final episode.
That's fine, though.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I like that tradition.
The only reason it kind of just feels odd is because the fight itself is not against something that really...
It's not against something that actually feels important.
Yeah, that's...
The within the context of the series.
Yeah. So I was like, I see why they're doing that, but...
So at this point, I'm just going to, like, point to a couple neat bits of choreography, like with Gaim and Ryugen running along and throwing the Daidai Maru across. I mean, that had to be kind of tough to get right.
Honestly, if you stop and look at it for a second, because I went back, it's like, it looked like he almost fumbled, and it does almost look like he almost fumbled.
And then a little bit later, when Jam kicks up the combined weapon into his own hand, also just looked really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pretty good for spectacle. Like, also, Kota just stopping the sparking attack.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, that's right, he's a god.
He has complete control over all Helheim related things. He can just do that.
And it's kind of like, you're almost sitting there wondering throughout
why he's not just eliminating it himself.
Yeah, and
because
and
he wants Mitchie to do it with.
Exactly.
That is the point I was getting to. It's like, you're sitting there saying, why, Coach, why are you bothering me to fight? I was like, oh, okay, he just stopped that like it was nothing. He could end this at any time, couldn't he?
all he's trying to do is show Mitchie that he can do it himself if he has to. Kota's just kind of here for motivation.
Basically.
Motivation, yeah, Kota could have just probably whisked Jam away in the meteor apple. And, you know, been done with the whole thing.
The Rider War, that's how he appears places. It's just this giant golden apple. God, I don't know what...
In that case, him and Meteor need to have a teleport fight.
I cannot imagine what they're going to there's, let's face it, there has not been a good movie war since Megamax, and Megamax was the only good movie war. I can't imagine that it's going to be anything worth writing home about.
Probably, like, I don't expect
what it would do, because it's not like, even Wizard left things hanging. Gaim, not really. Which is,
I mean, it's going to have to be
threads as Gaim had floating around. It's impressive that they kind of tied them all up one way or another.
It's going to have to be out of continuity.
I do like the final symbolism of ending the last fight with a Rider kick.
Well, yeah.
That's nice.
Well, the next movie wars needs to be a decade visiting Gaim. Clearly.
It walked in like, well, what the hell happened? No, I am all... I am all for Tsukasa showing up and whatever the hell he wants to at random. Because that is the best part of Kamen Rider Wars. It's Tsukasa. Tsukasa and Shotaro. It's Tsukasa interacting with Shotaro. and Shotaro interacting with Kaito.
So Kota basically gives Mitchie a pep talk and says, you guys are fine without us. You can do this now. And Kota beams himself away.
He goes back to his home planet.
I have to return to my home planet now.
It needs me.
And it's literally true now.
Yes, it is.
Oh yeah, I had a sister. Tell her I'm cool.
And just then, Team Bravo and Takatora show up, apparently none the wiser for Kota's interference.
So maybe he was all in Mitchie's head.
Yeah, really?
No. And then, it's Baron. Or Kaito, anyway.
The tree is magically there.
Gee, I wonder who did that. As the next generation of street dancers come to marvel at how it just popped up overnight.
Now, I will say those kids are a little heavy-handed.
You think?
Just a little bit.
Children typically can't act, so...
No, I don't think that's what he means. I don't think that's what he means.
It's not about their acting. It's about their mere presence.
how one is wearing, you know, a black vest and red shirt, the other is wearing blue plaid.
Has messy Kota-like hair.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible this is meant to be even farther in the future and those are, like, their descendants or something?
How could they have descendants? Kaito is dead. Kota and Mai are on another planet.
We don't,
and not human anymore.
They were knocked up before they died.
Kota and Mai are busy populating another planet.
Look, Kaito was on a dance team. You know he was rolling in pussy.
Wow. A dance team made up all of dudes, though.
Yeah, but the bitches flock to dancers. Because they got the moves. They've got the touch.
But anyway, Kaito is only interested in strength.
If you ignore the kids, it's not a bad scene. So if you ignore half the scene, it's not a bad scene.
Well, yeah, it's basically my letting Kaito's spirit go find peace.
Which I do like.
Which is nice.
He's basically stuck
my
in that tree
character
for all eternity.
He's not stuck in... Like, I think what it is Kaito was... You know, it's the whole thing of... A ghost with unfinished business stays around as a ghost, but Mai's basically giving him peace so he can move on and not be stuck there anymore.
Right.
And also it resolves Mai and Kaito's final scene, which they never really got.
And Ghost Kaito acknowledges Mai as being strong also.
So that the only two people that he acknowledges such are Kota and Mai.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's... Mai's character is kind of funny because it's like for half the series, most of us are like, "Oh God, it's another scene with Mai." And then you got like halfway through when she actually found out about everything, slapped Mitchie in the face.
Yeah, no, I mean she made a total turnaround and became a valuable character.
Yeah.
No, I mean I remember making
Mitchie
the joke.
Face. She was slapping herself in the face.
I remember
saying,
making
wake
joke.
Wake the hell up, bitch! Stop being irritating. Be useful.
I remember the jokes. It's like, oh, Mai's on screen. My ears kind of started bleeding, and I stopped paying attention to what was going on. But after that...
Yeah, it all came about as soon as she found out about Yuya and what was actually going on. Oh, okay. I'll stop being a dumbass.
Oh, you've been keeping me in the dark about important things. Well, maybe I'm not going to be shallow anymore.
Yeah.
And then, right at the end, we flash over to their planet, which has now turned blue.
So, I don't even know what the hell that signifies.
I think it's covered
in lava, and now it's covered in water.
No, because like,
Kota?
I think more that just, you know, originally it was just like barren rock, and now they have filled it with life.
They filled it with water? They let the tap on?
Well, see, that's what happens when they both leave the house at the same time.
That's not untrue, also.
Those aren't really the two people I would pick to, like, lead a new world, but you take what you can get.
Fairness, so, there could be much worse choices.
This episode has some problems.
Yes.
No one's denying that. However, I still think it's important, and I think it's important to take it as canon. Because it resolves a lot of things character-wise.
Like, I've expressed that I would be just as happy to pretend the series ended at 46, but 47 is not, like, offensive to me.
No, there are redeeming things into it. I think
47 was important despite its faults.
Yeah, I thought 46 was really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And
46,
it just
46
feels,
was a...
I don't know, it's hard to even put a finger on it, but it just feels out of place.
46 was a perfectly
flawed, but it definitely feels like a satisfying end to the series.
Are you
46 was a perfectly
again?
Starting to answer that for Max.
46 was a perfectly valid point to end the series on. 47 managed to take that and wrap up some of the secondary characters. Maybe not in the way I would have ideally liked to see them get wrapped up, but it still paid service to them, even if it wasn't the best it could have been. Like, that's my ultimate takeaway. It complements the series, but is not, like, strictly necessary to be part of the series, if that makes sense.
Right.
And yeah. I'm kind of satisfied with them handling it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really, like, it doesn't hurt anything that came before, and that's pretty much the most you can ask for an epilogue episode by a separate writer. Yeah, it respects everything that happened before and just tries to add a little bit to it for some extra closure.
Yeah, that's true. And because they needed to fill another week before Drive started.
And I'm not looking at it that way either, honestly. Like, they could have had it where the actual series went 47 episodes. I think it was just, like, purposely, you know, end the series with one episode left, let us do an epilogue episode.
Yeah, well, it might be more of a case that where they saw what they were given, and they're like, well, we could still add to this or something.
Yeah, I don't even really see it as being that. I think this is more planned ahead than you're giving it credit for.
Well, I don't think it's not, but...
Plus, it also kept them from possibly having to rush things like in the last episode of Double.
God.
And also, if we hadn't had this episode, we would have missed out the resolution of Michi's story with Kota,
mm-hmm.
of my story with Kaito, of Jonichi and Hase. So, you know, there's a lot that was left unfinished in 46. Mm-hmm. Stuff that months from now we were saying, hey, wait a sec, they kind of forgot to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
To a degree.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing that we would have, like, pointed to immediately. But
if
yeah, I think
suffer through 10 minutes of bullshit of jam to get 10 minutes of important things, I'm fine with that.
And I don't even... Like, to me, jam basically just exists as...
An excuse to have the episode.
Excuse to have the episode on the air.
Exists as a fill-in-the-blank. You know, we need an antagonist for this episode. Spray-paint that costume and stick it in there.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Jam, this would have been an extended version of the 46 on the DVD.
Yeah, actually. I could totally see that. It would be the director's cut 46.
And we still might get that anyway, for all we know.
Mm. Although, all that being said, I wouldn't mind also still a Gaim Returns in, like, 6 months from now. Because, I mean, they could still find their justification and get a little bit more off of this. And still revisit the characters that are still around.
Yeah, because there's still stories to be told about Kota Jesus.
Yes.
Well, not even Kota and Mai. Just, you know, the people who are still left in Zawame. You know.
Well, but that too, but as well as, you know, Kota's become a god. And we kind of want to know what happened to Kota once he became that. Is he still Kota? Is he less than Kota?
He's probably really bored.
Well, look at it like this. He finally got a job.
And that's the ultimate resolution to Kota's character arc.
He finally got a job.
Amazing.
So that was Kamen Rider Gaim.
I don't envy Kamen Rider Drive right now.
Well, and that's
some mighty big shoes to fill.
I mean, it's kind of like coming off of any good series, say Gokaiger. You try not to look at it like, try not to go into it comparing, because it's going to be different. It is completely different writer.
We have Riku Sanjo doing a cop show,
which is hit or miss. But
if the subs are up in time, are we going to talk about Drive next week?
No,
probably not, because we have like Tokyuger catch up and
Battlefield.
I for one want some time to digest the first episode of Drive before we end up.
So that way we're not barreling into it.
And as much as I hate to say it, if Overtime's doing the subs, it probably won't be out in time for next week's recording anyway.
Yeah.
True. Okay.
I'd already given that some thought. But, I mean, like, we need to go in to this with it in our heads that this is going to be a different series and it's not going to be like Gaim and, you know, we need to... We need to try to give this as fair a shake as possible.
Give a week to digest it.
All I'm saying, if I don't see Drive transform with fruit within three episodes, I'm out.
Well, kind of a fun turnaround to when we first heard about Gaim. But Again, this thing about Drive, it looks really cool.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has me concerned too, but hopefully hopefully that curse will have been broken at this point.
Yeah, and again, I really like the concept of a hero Kamen Rider that is a cop. The main hero that is a cop.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically G3X the series.
Or Axel the series.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Go on, Dragante the series.
What? You both talk at the same time.
Go on, Dragante the series.
I'd watch it.
But you know that is one of the things I like the best about Axel is playing off the aspects of him being a police officer.
But he wasn't openly XL to his police group. Where that's why I was using the G3X thing because
he was
a salaried Kamen Rider.
Drive's job as an officer is Kamen Ridering.
Is Drive open to the rest of his department though? Is the question, or is it just a girl?
Since they have like their own special division, I kind of took it as you know they
so
at
did,
least are.
So did Terui actually. It was just three guys, but.
They were very special.
Yes, it was still his own division, and nobody knew was any the wiser because he was still investigating the same things that Axel was destroying. Kind of the old Clark Kent, Peter Parker thing. Where'd you get the story from? Superman just happened to show up. Yeah, imagine that.
But yeah, Gaim was an amazing series, and both of its resolution episodes were pretty good.
Yep, and once again, the movie war can only go down.
It's a movie war, of course.
Yes.
Precisely.
I can't see the
Mega Max.
I can't see
the last one, did we?
No.
I did. I regretted
it. We didn't watch it for podcasting, though. I can't see the movie war being anything but an alternate continuity.
Now, props that they try to do something otherwise, but they also might ruin everything if they do.
Yeah, don't props them before you actually see what the result of that attempt would be.
This is true. Considering that, Kamen Rider Wars was pretty good.
So, what episodes do we have to watch for next week?
I'm not actually up on Tokyo Drew episode number because I only watched on live stream.
I
don't know.
Let's see
here. Fort Max?
I don't know.
Oh.
Hold on a second.
Damn it, Fort Max, you're supposed to be our fat checker.
It's not like you said fat checker.
Yeah, he checks her fat, too.
Okay, so out that we have not covered is 28, 29, and 30.
Okay, so next will be 28 and 29. Mm-hmm. And then the week after, probably 30 and 31. And, first episode of Drive, and we'll probably skip Power Playback again.
Then we'll back on track. God damn it.
Paladin, I am going to punch you in the face.
That wasn't Paladin, but please blame him. He's infected us all.
Okay. For the record, I'm not Giga Beetle. I can tell the difference between you and Paladin.
Okay. So you realize this is just his influence rubbing
yes.
off on us.
Yes.
Under the new invest fruit.
Yeah, Ken, you're a victim. You're not to blame.
So now he has to be put down like Hase, doesn't he?
Aw, that's so sad.
Aw.
We'll get Giga Beetle to do it.
Yeah, he'd probably enjoy it.
Giga Beetle would probably put Ken down instead.
I thought we were talking about putting Ken down. Because Ken's the victim. It's not his fault, but he's still infected and has to be put down.
Oh,
like Hase. And, you know, Giga Beetle's our Sigurd.
You know, the thing about Hase's death, though, is that it never really got to me until, like, that last moment where he's trying to put up his picture.
Yeah.
Through the entire series, it's like, well, he died, but who cares?
Yeah. Jonouchi cared.
Jonouchi cares.
We didn't know that Jonouchi cared.
It was his doormat.
Jonouchi showed signs of caring.
Yeah, I mean, at first, you didn't know that he cared because he walked off and left him. And
but I mean, but Jonouchi did occasionally ask about.
Yeah, that's when you see him start asking Kota, and Kota just kind of clams up. You're like, oh, well,
yeah.
crap.
But yeah, when he puts up the missing person flyer and so I mean that's also the resolution to Hase a little bit too, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Hase as himself was a very unremarkable character.
Yeah.
The fact that they even mentioned Hase again even once after he was killed.
And they actually showed his actor instead of like doing that thing where they'll like mention a character show around the character or just show them in the suit or something. So yeah. actor probably got paid for that episode, even though he didn't have to do anything.
And well, he got another thing of flowers too.
Really? Is that actually true?
There's a picture of him that was posted on Twitter a while back that had all the main cast together with flowers.
Oh God.
Pretty much had all the cast from the last episode with flowers.
And you know, the reason you always knew Takatoro would come back is
because he didn't get flowers.
Every time you thought he died, you're like, you have to ask, well, did the actor get flowers? And did they post about it on Twitter? No. Okay. So,
which I mean, you can explain that because you know he was there playing the ghost the whole time.
Yeah,
but
and
still.
that was actually a good red herring because
it was
because the week before that. Because they had the soccer episode, and then in the preview of the soccer episode, they showed Takatoro, and I was like, "Oh, you sons of bitches! I can't believe you did that shit again." And then you get to the actual episode, and it's like, "Oh,
yeah,
well played, Toei. Well played. They used their knowledge of ruining everything in the previews against me.
Yeah, they subverted Ultra Magnus dies. Well done." Okay, that'll be our show for this week. So next week it'll be Tokyo Jour 28 and 29, right? That's what we figured out.
Yeah.
And Battle Fever.
Battle Fever episode 7?
Whatever the most recent one is, yeah.
7 sounds good.
Why? Rather Mickey, don't change it in between now and then.
Oh, what are the odds of that?
I'm pretty sure I think it's 7. We're going to go with 7, and, you know, if it's different, it'll be reflected on Twitter if I remember to do it.
We should be scared of 7.
Why?
Because 7, 8, 9. A-A-O! A-A-O!
A-A-O! Rise up, you're our friend! You've been listening to Superhero Time. Go to tokupodcast.com for show notes and to listen to previous episodes. Find us on iTunes or download our Android app at tfradio.net/android. Follow us on Twitter for show updates, weekly power playback, and more at superhero_time. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production.
So with the exception of Fort Max, who was like -12 when these commercials were airing, we all kind of remember these, right?
Yeah. Oh, this Barbie motorhome commercial has Tia and Tamara, whatever their last name was.
Oh, really?
One of them.
Hard to tell which one, I guess.
It may have actually been both of them because I think there was some law.
Okay, so here's the interesting thing that all this is going to.
Yes.
We all have this shared experience of watching these, right?
Yeah, yes. Pretty much.
Because at the time, there was only so many channels, and we all watched the same channels the same times.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen nowadays.
No.
There's a billion channels, a billion choices, and then there's Netflix and video games. People growing up today will not have the same shared cultural experience as the other people they grew up with.
That's true.
And everybody blocks out commercials anyway now.
Even like shows, like say for instance, just because I'm here, if I'm going to watch Gotham, I'm going to do it tomorrow when it goes up on Hulu.
Oh yeah, right.
Kind of mistake, but well, we don't have to get into that right now.
The entire face of nostalgia is going to change over the next 20 years when people don't have this type of thing that they relate to the same way.
Yeah, because like when this would be on, I would be See, is it 1990? So, was Fox Kids a thing yet? I can't remember.
No, not yet.
So it that was CBS start... and ABC that had their cartoon Saturday morning things then.
Fox Kids didn't really start in earnest until I'd say like the year before Power Rangers.
When X-Men.
Yeah.
When X-Men and Batman came out.
Yeah.
So but,
that seems about
like,
right.
Yeah. You know, either way, you would flip between all of these Saturday morning blocks depending on what was on but you would
and
still
they would
be
run
kind
the
of watching
commercials all the time.
And it'll be like maybe three different blocks at a time, mm-hmm. at the most.
And so all of us basically had the same childhood.
Right.
Basically. That's a good point, though. I never thought about it like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not saying that the new kids' childhoods are worse.
Oh, no.
They're just going to be greatly different in how they think back about them and how they're able to relate to other people.
So, like, Saturday morning cartoons is not a thing anymore.
Exactly.
The only place that does anything for Saturday mornings now is Cartoon Network, but they show cartoons all the time, so it's not necessarily special.
It's not special, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Or even, you know, syndicated stuff in the mornings. Wake up at 6 a.m. before you go to school and watch.
Yeah, there's none of that anymore.
Yes. Or get home after school and they would be scheduled just so that way they were coming on just so you came out after
right.
school.
Right.
Yep. Fox Kids Afternoon.
Huh?
Exactly. And actually, my Fox Kids aired stuff right before that and right after that. So.
Yeah. It's.
Because the local affiliate stuff.
Yeah. It's a little sad that we can't pass that nice shared experience on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of a cultural thing. It's like nothing you can really do to affect it.
All right, let's all play a game and guess what Ken's eating right now. Now Ken, don't answer until we've all guessed.
Pork rinds.
Pretzel.
Triscuits.
I keep telling y'all I hate pork rinds.
So it's either me or Paladin. Who's closest?
What was Paladin's again?
I said pretzel.
Oh man, a Game Boy commercial.
I guess actually Paladin would be closest because it's Cheetos.
Damn.
No, I think pork rinds is closer to Cheetos than pretzels.
How do you figure that?
Pretzels aren't fried.
A point.
They're baked, not fried. That means they're healthy.
Right.
Superhero time. 次回もよろしく。
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.